All right, good morning. The Arizona Board of Behavioral Health Examiners will now come to order. It's May 14th, 2021 at 9 a.m. So we're starting right on time, and it's great to see so many people in person. I asked for patience because I'm not used to being back in person. So very happy to see all of you here. Can we get a roll call, please?
Kimberly Bailey.
We have all mics. Make sure we're all off mute.
Robert Charles.
Here.
Mary Coonrod.
Here.
Cedric Davis.
Good morning.
Patricia Drobatz.
Here.
Lynette Hennigan.
Here.
Megan Kramer. Cassandra Parr.
Here.
Heidi Quinlan.
Present.
Mark Shin.
Here.
Gerald Szymanski. Antoine Trotter.
Here.
Thank you. My name is Patricia Dobereth. I am the board's chairperson. A couple of reminders. I'd like to ask everybody to please be sure that your cell phone is turned off or on silent. We're also asking that all members of the public in attendance to continue wearing a mask throughout the meeting unless you've come forward, your case has been called, and you're speaking to the board. Board members, it's at your discretion whether or not to wear a mask. Throughout the meeting, if somebody needs to use the restroom, they're located across from the elevators in the lobby. For your convenience, there's also vending machines right outside the boardroom to your left. We'll take a brief lunch break around noon today. And a reminder that this is an open meeting. It's being recorded, and the audio from the meeting will be posted to the board's website. As such, we appreciate everyone's assistance in speaking clearly and into your microphones. At this point, I'm going to ask board members and staff to introduce themselves. But a quick welcome. We do have a new board staff member, Erin Yabu, is with us as our new deputy director for the Board of Behavioral Health Examiners. And so welcome. And I'm familiar with Ms. Yabu's work, and we are in good hands as she steps into Ms. Dalton's spot. So we will start with board members, if you'll introduce yourself, starting with Ms. Quinlan.
Heidi Quinlan, professional.
Bob Charles, public member.
Cassandra Parr, professional member.
Antoine Trotter, public member.
Lynette Hennigan, professional member.
Kimberly Bailey, professional member.
Doc Davis, professional member.
Mark Shin, professional member.
Mary Coonrod, public member.
Ian Hearmand, assistant director.
Erin Yabu, deputy director.
Alyssa Vanderveen, operations manager.
Toby Zavala, executive director.
Mona Baskin, assistant attorney general, representing the board.
And we will go to our first item of business on the agenda for today, which will be number three, a review of our past minutes. Starting with 3A, our April 9th telephonic general meeting minutes. I believe everybody is eligible to vote on that. Is there a motion to accept those minutes?
Davis moves it.
Second. Sure. Oh. Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. 3B is the telephonic executive session minutes. Is there a motion to approve those?
Davis moves it.
Second, Trotter.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And then 3C is our April 13th general meeting minutes. I believe Mr. Charles, Mr. Chen, and Ms. Hennigan need to abstain from that vote. Is there a motion to accept the April 13 minutes?
Davis moves it.
Race for seconds. Coonrod second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. And that will bring us to agenda item four, which the items on the consent agenda will be voted on as they appear, unless there is somebody that is asking to pull a case for us to reconsider. So we'll first go to 4A, which are our cases recommended for dismissal. Is there anybody here who wished to pull the Holmgren or Klein matter? All right. Is there a motion for dismissal?
Davis moves it.
Second. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. That'll bring us to Consent Agenda 4B. Cases recommended for dismissal with a letter of concern. Is there anybody here who wishes to pull the Denny or Escalante cases? All right. Is there a motion to dismiss with a letter of concern?
Davis moves it.
Our second.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Consent Agenda 4C. These are cases recommended for release from consent agreements. Anybody here to pull Popke, Porras, Senna, Sweeney, or Wilson? All right. Is there a motion to release from the consent agreements?
Davis moves it.
Hennigan second.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. That will take us to Consent Agenda 4G. Cases recommended for acceptance of proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement. Ms. Schmidt's case, is there anybody here to pull this matter? And could you please come forward? Am I correct that you're the complainant in this matter? Okay. And we will be referring to you by initials. Ms. KL, I believe. Is that correct? All right. And so the way that this will work is we will have, well, also let me see, is Ms. Schmidt here present? Perfect. So we'll hear a brief summary from board staff, and then you'll have up to 5 minutes to present to the board, and then Mr. Carey and the licensee will have up to five minutes as well. We do have all of the materials in the matter, so we ask that you not repeat, but anything additional for us to consider. And brief summary from board staff.
Madam Chair, members of the board, as you're aware, this case was put on the consent agenda as a recommendation from board staff for a letter of concern. Given the areas of concern identified in the investigative report, board staff contacted licensee to discuss the option of entering into a non-disciplinary consent agreement, which would specify the following. Although the information provided is not of sufficient seriousness to merit direct action against her, the board is issuing an NDCA based on licensee's concerning conduct. Within 12 months, licensee shall complete 6 clock hours of the NASW staying out of trouble course or an equivalent course, and there is a proposed NDCA that has been signed by the complainant.
Any questions for?
Excuse me, by the complainant or by the?
I'm sorry, by the licensee. I apologize.
Any questions for Ms. Zavala? All right, you have up to 5 minutes to address the board, and if you could turn the mic on in front. Is it green? I can't tell. It's green now. I think you're good. Oh.
When it's green, yeah.
Green?
There we go. It's
there we go.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me, and I just want to say I'm not here in opposition at all. First, I want to apologize to Ms. Zavala and Mr. Herman for treating you and your staff poorly during this process. Initially, it was never my intention after this incident occurred to process what happened with a new therapist before making a formal complaint. Regrettably, that didn't happen, although I don't withdraw it. I simply just want to take this opportunity to make clear my issue so as to not undermine this process and ensure that my message hasn't been overshadowed by my own haste and arrogance. I'm a licensed psychologist. Last year, I retired from my position with the state of California under industrial disability after 15 years, due in large part to mental health issues. The overwhelming grief I felt at what I perceived was an epic failure and loss of my career was not only a complete distortion, but was my reason for seeking therapy and the primary focus of my treatment with your licensee. Professionally, I always strive to be the best I could be, and I take great pride in that because I did work really hard and I care so much about my contributions to this field in the past and for the future. That's why I'm here today. If I could, I would go back and do things differently. Resolve the matter informally is what the APA recommends. I tried that. I wasn't provided another opportunity until now to resolve it. The point is that the therapeutic relationship is really powerful. It's sacred and there are rules. The APA is extremely explicit when it comes to standards of practice. Clinicians must never terminate therapy prematurely without patient's agreement, without referring them out appropriately, and without a valid reason. If a patient's in crisis, which I was, that's even more important. Potentially a less informed patient could have been more harmed. There also was never any follow-up. It's been easy for me to intellectualize therapy because I know how to, but it doesn't matter because in this scenario, I'm the patient and I'm the public, and I didn't feel protected at the time. I didn't get the chance to terminate appropriately with my therapist, which we all know is an extremely important and valuable part of the therapeutic process, even from the beginning. In retrospect, I believe that both me and your licensee could have been responding very strongly to respective feelings of transference and countertransference, which, when left unchecked, can become disastrous. I see that there have been updated rules and regulations regarding supervision and this credential. While this rupture is really unfortunate, I have no ill will towards your licensee or towards any of you, especially Ms. Zavala and Mr. Herman. Actually, I really appreciate how you handled this because I'm better for it. This process has helped me more than you can even imagine. Like I said earlier, my purpose in coming here today was so that I could write what I did was wrong here, and to thank you for taking action to ensure that clinicians that are licensed in the state of Arizona are solid, and that they are ethical and knowledgeable and have proper training and experience, and also that they utilize good judgment, even when not necessarily acting in a professional capacity. That's a gray area ethically, and I still don't know a good answer for it, but I do know that how I acted is not how I want to portray myself in any capacity, professional or otherwise. I hope if our paths cross again, it's in a much more favorable way, because if for nothing else, now more than ever, we need to empower people. People need access to quality mental health care. I trust this process, and I appreciate everyone who has taken the time to carefully address this matter while keeping in mind the mission to protect the public. Thank you.
Are there any questions from board members? We appreciate you being here and for your comments. I'd ask you to take your seat, and Ms. Schmidt and counsel, if you would come forward, please. Good morning. If you would introduce yourselves for the record, please.
Chair Dobratz, members of the board, Flynn Carey, counsel for Ms. Schmidt.
Good morning. I'm Lisa Schmidt, LAC.
And collectively, you have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you. Chairwoman, members of the board, this is a case where I think we see the opposite a lot of the time, which is a provider who doesn't recognize there needs to be an elevation into the level of care that's required. I think this is one where someone recognized that a higher level of care was necessary, involved an individual who could help the complainant realize that level of care, and took steps to properly set boundaries when she recognized that the level of care she could provide required the additional step first of the additional higher level of care. So she set a very clear boundary, and that was done appropriately. We appreciate some of the documentation concerns that were described in there. We think the NDCA and doing staying out of trouble is an opportunity for this provider. I think that she's used this very effectively as an opportunity to advance her practice. And so we're very much in support of the NDCA.
Anything that you would add, Ms. Schmidt?
No, not at this time.
Questions from board members? Thank you. This will be our time to discuss. We ask that you not interrupt. Ask if there's any discussion or if there is a motion to accept the proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement.
Madam Chair, members of the board, if there is no discussion, and I'll pause now in case there is, I'll move to approve the non-disciplinary consent agreement. It's been drafted and signed.
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Oppose? Motion carries. Thank you for being here. Thank you again for being here as well. And this will conclude this matter. To agenda item 7, complaints and disciplinary matters. This is the time and place scheduled for the board's review of disciplinary matters. They will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it by ARS 32-3281. Please be aware that we have read all of the materials submitted. During the course of the meeting and discussions, if it's necessary to refer to clients, this includes when the complainant is a client, please be sure to use initials only. Those licensees or applicants on today's agenda received by mail a board meeting notice, which included a list of potential actions the board could take once we reach the deliberation stage. This list is not exclusive, and there may be other options that the board considers. For each matter, the board will first hear a brief summary of the case from board staff. And once staff has done, other interested parties, including the complainant, if applicable, and the professional will be given an opportunity to address the board. In order to give everyone the same opportunity, we ask that those speaking not take time repeating information the board has already received. You and your legal counsel, if applicable, collectively will be given the same amount of time it took the board to present its investigative report, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. Please keep in mind the board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of any type of disorderly conduct. Those violating this policy will be asked to leave the room. Once the board concludes its discussions with the parties, we'll move into deliberations. While you're free to stay and listen, we do ask that you not interrupt during deliberations. And please remember, everything is being recorded, so if we can speak clearly and into our mics, that would be appreciated. We will first be going to 7C, Ms. Jimenez. And Mr. Hover, you're representing Ms. Jimenez, is that correct?
Yes.
And in the interest of full transparency, for the record, I would like to state that Ms. Jimenez is a former student of mine, but after consideration and reading the materials, I don't feel that there's a conflict or a bias, so I'm not going to be recusing from this matter. And I would ask that, Ms. Zavala, if we can have a brief summary from board staff, please.
Madam Chair, members of the board, we actually heard the three cases in front of you in regards to licensee in October of 2020. At that time, based on the conduct, the board members found a violation of ARS 3232516L as engaging in any conduct, practice, or condition that impairs the ability of the licensee to safely and competently practice, as well as ARS 3232516Y, engaging in a dual relationship. Those violations were found, as well as the findings of facts, and at that time, the board offered Ms. Jimenez a consent agreement for a number of stipulations. Upon review and consideration by the licensee and her attorney, they declined signing the proposed consent agreement. At that time, following a number of discussions with the licensee's attorney, board staff did draft a proposed modified consent agreement, which would have the exact same findings of facts as well as conclusions of law that were founded by the board, with the only difference is the board had offered a consent agreement for 24 months of supervision, and this consent agreement would allow her to ask for early release after 12 months. So what that would look like is she would have a clinical supervisor, and after 12 months, if the clinical supervisor felt that her clinical care and her documentation was where it needed to be, she could recommend early release from the board. The only other change that was made to it is any continuing education that had been taken by Ms. Jimenez after the board complaint was filed could be considered, and once again, this would be courses that she would take that would not be used on her renewal. And so we do have a signed consent agreement for the board members' review and consideration.
Are there any questions for Ms. Zavala from board members? And for the record, Ms. Jimenez is not present, but her counsel, Mr. Hover, is. And
thank you.
You would have up to 5 minutes if you wish to address the board.
Good morning. I ask that you bear with me. Seeing you all in three dimensions and in depth is freaking me out a little bit. Thank you, Ms. Zavala. We worked together adding the terms and conditions. It was me that I thought that based on the time that I've spent with you all, after 12 months, at least allowing the professionals who she is seeing to chime in and determine whether or not she needed any more continuing therapy or continuing supervision. That is solely within their discretion. It is merely a time period where she can come forward and ask to be released from those provisions if it is something that the professional that she is seeing actually supports. Other than that, As described by Ms. Zavalas, the consent agreement has been signed and remains basically the same with just that caveat. Thank you.
Any questions for council? All right, this will be our time to discuss. Is there discussion or a motion to accept the proposed modified consent agreement?
Coonrod, I would make a motion to accept the modified consent agreement.
Trotters.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Cassandra Parr.
Aye.
Heidi Quinlan.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye. Motion passes. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hover. Campbell, is the complainant here on this matter?
Yeah.
Yes. Did you wish to speak?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll ask that you come forward then. And Ms. Campbell, Mr. Hover, if you would remain seated.
I'm fully vaccinated. Can I take the mask down?
Well, you're speaking to the board. You can. Yep. Well, you're sitting there. Absolutely.
Thank you.
And we're going to first hear a brief summary from board staff, and then we'll be turning towards you.
Following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 32-3251-16M, engaging or offering to engage as a licensee in activities that are not congruent with the licensee's professional education, training, or experience. This recommendation is based on the following. On 121-19 and 128-19, licensee provided individual behavioral health sessions to client. Complainant was present during these sessions as a collateral. Licensee prepared, signed, and gave client an undated and unaddressed letter on private practice letterhead to client that included the following opinions. Licensee has deep concerns for the safety and well-being of client due to the toxic nature of the communication that transpired in licensee's office. Complainant is dominated, condescending, and narcissistic and falls into a classic victim codependent role. After observing complainant's attempts to manipulate licensee to collude with him through seductive gestures towards licensee, licensee questions complainant's character. Complainant presents as very calculated and extremely manipulative to have his objectives met. There are concerns that the marriage was contrived for financial gain, and this was under strong debate during the therapy sessions. Additionally, the letter includes the following statement, which appears to diagnose complainant. Licensee would classify complainant as a sociopathic narcissist as he exhibited no remorse or regret during these sessions. Licensee represented the following regarding the letter. Client requested a summation of the first two sessions and licensee complied. Licensee initially represented she did not know what client planned to do with the summation. However, licensee subsequently represented she was aware that the letter was going to be used in divorce proceedings. At the time client made the request for a summary, there was no request from the courts. Licensee did not assign complainant a diagnosis, but because he was not her client. Licensee's summation clearly indicates that this is a classification, but did not state it's a diagnosis. Because licensee knows the criteria of narcissistic personality disorder, she was able to provide the classification for complainant as a sociopathic narcissist. Licensee felt it was appropriate to write a letter about a collateral to a third party because the letter was protective support for client. Licensee should have realized that providing an unsolicited opinion of complainant to the court was outside the scope of and not congruent with her therapeutic duties. Additionally, it is concerning that licensee diagnosed complainant as a sociopathic narcissist since he was a collateral, not her client. Furthermore, licensee's representation that including the term in the letter is merely a classification and not a diagnosis seeks to draw a distinction without difference. Additionally, following the review of the investigative record, it appears to have the following violation. ARS 32-3251-16P, failing to conform to minimum practice standards as developed by the board as it relates to consent for treatment, treatment plan, client record, and telepractice. This recommendation is based on the following. On 1/21/19, licensee provided client with a consent for treatment for individual behavioral health services. Despite complainant being a collateral and not a client, licensee also provided complainant with a consent for treatment for individual behavioral health services. Additionally, licensee acknowledged in her written response that the distinction between client rights and collateral rights were not explained to complainant. Furthermore, licensee acknowledged not explaining the distinction may have led complainant to the conclusion that he was a client of the licensee. Licensee's acknowledgement that complainant may have concluded he was licensee's client appears to have come to fruition based on the following. Complainant's complaint indicates he never granted licensee permission to release his information. Complainant sent licensee a letter on 10/23/19 requesting progress notes from the sessions he attended as a collateral. Moreover, it appears licensee may have created additional confusion by indicating the following in an 11/25/19 letter to complainant. Licensee received complainant's letter requesting his clinical notes. Licensee is willing to provide a summation to complainant and will provide this upon complainant's request. Licensee represented the following during her investigative interview. Licensee has been working to correct her process for collaterals since the incident. It was licensee's standard protocol to have each participant in the session complete the same paperwork a client would complete. Licensee absolutely sees how it could be confusing for a collateral signing paperwork typically given to clients, and licensee had never been trained on collaterals. Additionally, both consents for treatment were missing elements. Licensee's 1/28/19 treatment plan for client was missing the date when the treatment plan would be reviewed. Licensee's progress notes were missing elements. Licensee's intake documentation were also missing elements in regards to telepractice elements. Licensee represents she has taken the following remedial measures since receiving the complaint. Licensee signed an agreement with Dr. Waterman to meet monthly over the next 6 months to conduct consultations around licensee's client forms. Licensee has completed the NASW staying out of trouble. And licensee has completely transitioned to electronic healthcare records through therapy notes. Licensee implemented collateral paperwork into her practice, and also licensee has submitted a number of new forms for her practice, and most of them do appear to meet the minimum requirements. However, the informed consent and the telecounseling forms do appear to be missing elements. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions for me.
Any questions from board staff? Would you introduce yourself for the record, please?
My name is Sean Donovan, and I'm the complainant in this matter.
Great, and you have up to 6 minutes to address the board, if there's anything you'd like to add.
You gave me a bonus minute?
I did, because Ms. Zavala got one. So if staff gets one, you get one.
Thanks. I'm not going to go through what was in the letter and what was in the letter that was supplied in my defense, except for one thing. I did request the notes from the counseling session, and they weren't provided. Okay, actually what was said was that I needed to get a court order in order to do that, and I do have that in writing. And so let's talk about the legal implications of this. That letter circulated through the court system at the time of a divorce. Okay, there were supplemental disclosures that had to be addressed. There were resumes and counseling sessions between my attorney and my ex-wife's attorney. Those took time, and they took money. Second, that letter was circulated among friends, family, and neighbors, causing irreparable harm to my reputation. Harm that can't be undone. There's nothing that can be done to make this whole again. So I've been injured permanently with some people, and that's disgusting. So I do have a remedy. The remedy is really very simple, and it sounds like it's in process right now anyway, is that this should never happen to anybody else again. Okay? That's all that I want. You can't undo anything that's been done to me, but you can do something that stops this from occurring again. That's your responsibility. You seem like you're competent professionals, and I'll leave it in your hands. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Do board members have any questions? All right. Mr. Donovan, I would ask you to take your seat, and then Ms. Campbell and counsel can come forward. And collectively, you would have up to 6 minutes also to address the board. If you would introduce yourselves for the record, please.
Good morning. Charlie Hover, counsel for Juniper Campbell.
Good morning. Juniper Campbell, licensed professional counselor.
Good morning. Thank you. What you see before you is unfortunately not unique to Ms. Campbell, nor is it that rare. During custody proceedings, during divorces, my colleagues tend to hurry up and ask for letters from professionals who may not have been fully aware of the implication of writing letters, how they can be used, and the purpose. Attorneys are not looking for glowing recommendations. They're looking for letters that set out evidence that can be used, unfortunately, to batter people during these processes. Ms. Campbell, as in most of the professionals that I have represented, kind of falls into that trap because usually the request is presented through the client, where there has been the bond, where there has been the understanding of situations, and where there is, I'm sure, a sense of need to protect and support the client. When I get these kinds of cases and it involves a letter, the first thing out of my mouth is, no, 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 here we go again. To her credit, the first time that I spoke with Ms. Campbell, she immediately understood the implications and the problems and the proper process to go through when receiving that. We then went into it in more depth, understanding the confusion that was caused by her failure to clearly define both the collateral and the client, intermixing the types of forms that would be used, which would lead to the confusion for which she takes full responsibility. It is an unfortunate incident going through these records, going through this process, that there does not appear to be a lot of support for professionals when they go out on their own or resources to actually understand these, get the proper documents put together. When I put Ms. Campbell in touch with Dr. Waterman, the light went on, the enthusiasm made itself very clear in understanding how to improve, how to address this issue, and how to remediate it and make amends for that through this process. So when I turn this over to Ms. Campbell, I encourage you to question her, her enthusiasm, at least in discussing with me what she has learned, what she's gone through, has been notable and infectious, and I think the process is working as it should. Given that, I would ask that the board seriously consider the processes that she's gone through, the growth that she's gone through, and consider a non-disciplinary letter of concern associated with non-disciplinary education. That is merely my suggestion. I understand where you need to go. I understand the pain that was expressed to you just moments ago. But please understand that there is no excuse being made for any of that by me or Ms. Campbell. We are just offering explanation and discussion of and endorsement for the remediation that she's gone through. So with that, I would turn it over to Ms. Campbell for any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Board members have any questions for Ms. Campbell?
I do have a few questions. Yeah. And I just want to say I appreciate much of what you've said because it's very true that when we're going into certain areas, there is not a lot of guidance for this. However, I think one of the things that comes back when we're talking about licensees is our ability, and I think we learn this as LACs and other licensees associate level, that and everything is in guidance, mentorship in this field, and having support groups, mentors to go to for all this stuff is so vitally important. And I think sometimes maybe our pride or excitement or whatever it is gets in the way of doing this stuff. but it's so important to seek out, you know, mentorship and guidance and documentation and getting examples and what do I do about this. And I did appreciate and hear that, you know, you had said that, you know, your training was not in family, you know, couples counseling and stuff like that. So I was a little bit concerned saying, you know, we're going into an area that we're also not really trained in. And that was a little bit concerning to me because, of course, especially not just couples counseling, but high conflict and court issues, and attorneys do like to take advantage of us, people, and so in this field. And so it is a very precarious area to get involved in. I do appreciate the corrections that have been made and the supervision. But I think, you know, there's also an element that I did see in there that was a little bit concerning, that I think we have a tendency, because we are feeling people, we wouldn't be in this field if we weren't, to almost have a lack of objectivity when it comes to especially family things and be a little bit biased toward one or the other. Obviously, there was the very clear confusion. And when I was reading it, obviously, there's a confusion. He did sign in his form, so technically, yes, he was fine. And so we have laws and rules and statutes about documentation and, you know, releasing records, and he does have a right to his medical record and statute and everything else. And so the fact that it was very quickly, she asked for a summary letter, and it wasn't an objectively written letter about just my client had this session, this was the goal, just very strict and to the point about the therapy. It crossed that line into a bias about and in a personal opinion in a way, and also a diagnosis. After two sessions, I don't know that any of us are, I don't know, I'm certainly not that talented to know, about something as alluding to a personality. So that was that was concerning to me. So I think it seemed to me there's a little countertransference. Yeah. But I'm wondering I think in here I read that you're not, who are your current client caseload that you are focused on?
I predominantly work veterans, first responders, I work with adolescent girls as well, age 13 and up. I actually completed the Gottman training, but after this experience, I'm not going to be doing it. I've decided to step away from that. So,
and I think also I just want to say, you know, I don't want people to be shying away from things just because, you know, I think everything's a learning experience. And that's great. But, I was just wondering who's that with your case?
Well, I live in a pretty rural community, so I offer couples therapy. And it's not something I do that frequently, but I offer couples therapy just as a service to my community. So.
And I certainly would want to just, again, the more education you get, certainly could be an asset, especially after this.
I've got my hands full with the adolescents. I think that's sufficient.
I don't think I really have any other questions.
Are there other questions from board members? All right. This is our time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt. 2020 has either aged me or something, but if we can talk into our mics, I'm having a difficult time hearing people, so just to make sure everybody can hear and the recording's picking up. And Ms. Quinlan, I believe you're leading this discussion.
So I've already said a few of my concerns that it came up when I read through this. I think she's done a lot of, obviously, corrective action and work, so I appreciate that in here. Unfortunately, so we can't ignore that violations did take place. Again, most of them have been addressed, and again, I appreciate how proactive she's been. At the same time, I do have to find the violations as they did occur in here, and as we heard, the complainants, you know, it did have a serious effect on his life, unfortunately, personally and possibly professionally. I do find in violation of ARS 32, 32, 51, 16, M for the engaging in activities not congruent with the professional education, training, or experience, as well as the documentation deficiencies of ARS 3232-5116.
And for the record, that would be our R46, 1101, 1102, 1103, and 1106.
Correct.
Is that your motion?
Bailey, second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Cassandra Parr.
Aye.
Heidi Quinlan.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion carries. Finland recommendations for
moving forward? Again, I want to preface so that it's heard that, again, I do appreciate the proactivity, and I do not want this to be seen as a complete failure. I think it's a learning opportunity. I would like to propose a signed consent agreement with maybe a 3-credit class in graduate level ethics. Also just a review of kind of thing, continue education in roles, boundaries, counter-transference type of thing. I think her background kind of led to a possible bias that maybe she didn't really see because of that. And also three, just because even though she's dealing with minors, as we know, children come with parents and family who often also end up in family court, and you just never know when that's going to happen. So also something about family and couples ethics, 3-credit, three maybe clock hours. I don't want to burn her with too much. I think she can get the same education through the clock hours. I would like to see the continuing supervision, probably twice a month, going over, obviously, documentation, board rules and statutes, ethics, boundaries, self-awareness, and that. I think that would be my proposal.
Is there anything anybody would add or question? Ms. Zavala, do you want to read back to us what you captured?
Just one question. Is that for 12 months? So we would be offering the licensee a consent agreement. She would be required to take 3-credit graduate level course in behavioral health ethics, 3 CEUs in roles, boundaries, and counter-transference, 3 CEUs in family law and family ethics. She'd also be required to get clinical supervision twice monthly. The focus of the supervision would be documentation, board's rules and statutes, behavioral health ethics, self-awareness, boundaries, and counter-transference. If not signed, she'll be invited to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remanded to a formal hearing. Is that your motion, Ms. Quinlan?
Yes.
Is there a second?
Shen, second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Cassandra Parr.
Aye.
Heidi Quinlan.
Aye.
Mark Shen.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Campbell, Mr. Hover. Thank you, Mr. Donovan, for being here. We appreciate it. And this will conclude this matter.
Thank you. Nice seeing you all, not in the Hollywood Squares configuration.
Thank you. Next, we're going to go to agenda item J. Ms. Von Rowe, I know we have to get somebody on the telephone for that. Is the complainant for that matter here by any chance? Do we have them on the phone, or do we need to take a break to
call? Both the attorney and the licensee.
Cannot be completed.
Hello, this is Kim.
Ms. Morgan?
Hello, this is Kim.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, this is Kim Moran.
Okay, and you are counsel for Ms. Von Rau, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And is she with you?
Rau is present today.
All right. My name is Patricia. I am the board's chairperson, and we just called this matter to catch you both up to speed. We have reviewed all of the materials in this case. We will start with a brief summary from board staff, and then we will give the two of you the same amount of time to then present to the board. All right. And
okay. Sounds good.
Thank you. Can we have a brief summary?
Madam Chair, members of the board, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. KRS 32-3251-16M, engaging or offering to engage as a licensee in activities that are not congruent with the licensee's professional education, training, or experience. This recommendation is based on the following. In September 2020, licensee completed an ESA form for an ASU ESA form for client one during their first and only session. Licensee documented the following on the ESA form. I recommend that this student's dog be with her at all times. The symptoms of panic attack, depression, and disassociation will be reduced by having the ESA. There is evidence that her dog helps her with her panic attacks and staying grounded. Licensee signed this form as a psychiatric social worker. Licensee represented the following to board staff. Licensee based client one's diagnosis for the ESA on client one's statements regarding her diagnosis from a previous therapist. Licensee admitted she was probably not able to accurately diagnose client one. Licensee has never had any education, classes, or training in completing ESA assessments. Licensee also admitted that client one informed her that two other therapists would not sign the ESA, and licensee did not ask why they declined to sign the ESA form. In October of 2020, licensee provided an ESA letter to client four, and it appears that this letter was provided during their first session. Despite not having specialized education, training, supervised experience, or professional credentialing, licensee completed the ESA documents for at least three clients. Additionally, it appears that licensee's basis for providing ESA letters was not based on any type of scientific methodology. For these reasons, it appears that licensee exceeded the boundaries of her competence. It is concerning that licensee provided client one and client four with ESA letters during their first sessions. It is also concerning that licensee completed the ESA form for client one despite the following facts. Licensee agreed to prepare the ESA form without having met client one, having provided any therapy, or conducted any diagnostic testing. Licensee accepted client one's statements regarding her diagnosis without obtaining her prior clinical records. Licensee completed the ESA form for client one with the knowledge that other behavioral health professionals refused to complete the form. Licensee represented the following regarding how she plans to deal with ESA documents in the future. I now believe I was not qualified to do this. Licensee would not take the risk of doing ESAs for clients in the future. Following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 32-3251-X, exploiting a client, former client, or supervisee for the purpose of this subdivision. Exploitation means taking advantage of a professional relationship with a client, former client, or supervisee for the benefit or profit of the licensee. This recommendation is based on the following. In defense of a board complaint, licensee contacted two clients, client two and client five. In support of her board complaint, licensee submitted the letters from client two and client five regarding their perspectives of licensee. Licensee represented the following regarding the letters from client two and client five. Licensee chose these clients because they had a very meaningful, deep, and valuable relationship with them as clients. Licensee understands that it is wrong to cross that boundary and get her clients involved. Furthermore, as a licensed behavioral health professional, licensee should recognize that the client-counselor relationship should be entirely therapeutic in nature and never exploited for the benefit of the counselor. Additionally, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 3232516K, engaging in any conduct or practice that is contrary to recognized standards of ethics in the behavioral health profession or that constitutes a danger to the health, welfare, and safety of the client as it relates to the following NASW section. 1.07, privacy and confidentiality. This recommendation is based on the following. After preparing the ESA for client one, licensee received a call from complainant. During her conversation with complainant, licensee confirmed that client one visited licensee that same day. Licensee represented the following to the board regarding her conversation with the complainant. Licensee realizes that she made a mistake. According to HIPAA, licensee should have said that according to federal and state law, she cannot divulge that information. Licensee did not have an ROI to release the information to complainant. By acknowledging her professional relationship with client one, licensee failed to protect client one's confidentiality. Additionally, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 3232516P, failing to conform to minimum practice standards as developed by the board as it relates to her consent for treatment, treatment plan, progress notes, and financial records. This recommendation is based on the following. Licensee's clinical record for client one was missing the consent for treatment, treatment plan, progress notes, and billing records. Based on these documentation deficiencies, board staff reviewed clinical records from three additional random clients and found the following deficiencies. Licensee did not complete informed consent forms for client two, client three, and client four until over 2 years, 2.5 years, and 6 months respectively after the first sessions and not until after board staff requested random client records. The treatment plans for client two, client three, and client four were missing several elements. The progress notes for client two and client three were also missing elements. The billing records for client two and client four did not meet minimum board requirements, and there were no billing records for client three. Licensee represented the following to board staff. Licensee admits that she should have completed consents for treatment. Licensee does not always document progress notes on every session. Licensee prepares progress notes intermittently. Licensee also stated, quote, I need help with this record keeping, and I'm very open to having a monitor or whoever teach me how to do this. It is highly concerning that after approximately 40 years in private practice, licensee was not aware of basic documentation requirements. Due to the extent of the documentation deficiencies, as well as licensee being in private practice, the board may want to consider ordering a practice monitor. That's all board staff has, unless you have any questions for us.
Do board members have any questions? Ms. Moran, Ms. Von Rau, you have up to 7 minutes to address the board if there's anything you would like to add.
Okay, thank you very much, members of the board. We thank you for accommodating Ms. Von Rau telephonically to appear today. I know the board has extensively reviewed the materials, so I will keep my comments brief and focus on a few issues and then make my client available for any questions that you may have. First, I want to point out that Ms. Von Rau is 80 years old. She has been practicing in her profession for nearly 50 years without ever receiving a single complaint. My client suffered severe stress as a result of this complaint. She was traumatized for weeks following the complaint. And I asked the board to consider this when reviewing pages 14 and 15 of the investigative report. I point this out because it is quite apparent based on a fair reading of the words in the report that she was suffering at this particular time, and the suffering caused her to make a series of mistakes and judgments during the investigation. With regard to the issue of my client completing ESA paperwork for client one, Ms. Von Rau simply wanted to help this young person get what she needed to attend college. The client was a new resident to Arizona, had no therapist in Arizona, and told Ms. Von Rau she needed the ESA paperwork to attend school based on a previous diagnosis involving depression and anxiety issues. Despite her limited knowledge in ESA practices, she believed she was helping client one. And moving forward, Ms. Von Rell has made the decision to no longer complete ESA paperwork for any of her clients. As to contacting her clients for letters of support, she believed at that time that she was in jeopardy of losing her license and that her credibility was in question. When she sought the two letters of support, she was reaching out in concern of the complaint. She was unrepresented by counsel at that time, and she had no legal guidance. She knows now not to do this again. With regard to the documentation issues, Ms. Von Rell has admitted her errors and thanks the board for pointing these deficiencies out. She has worked hard to correct her files and the issues, and her files presently meet the standards of the board. In hindsight of all three of these issues, after reading the investigative report, the applicable statutes, and participating in the interviews, she understands the errors she's made and will not make them again moving forward. However, board, with regard to the final issue of confidentiality, this is the one issue we do not see as straightforward as the report concludes. We understand why the investigator reached the conclusion she did. We agree that Ms. Von Rell did not have an express ROI in her file, and we agree that she spoke to the client's father and acknowledged client one as a client. However, in reading the complainant's written statement in attachment one, and I'm specifically referring to the entirety of paragraph two, complainant admits that his daughter, the client, opened up and told him about the appointment. It was his daughter who gave Ms. Von Rell her name and phone number. And Ms. Von Rell wants you to understand that this was not a pleasant phone call for her. She describes the complainant's demeanor with her as confrontational and very hostile. His first question to Ms. Von Rell, as he even quotes in his complaint, is, "I understand you are trying to charge my daughter $100 instead of $50 because you don't know how to work your printer." The client owns the confidentiality privilege, and based on the complainant's statement, it appears she impliedly consented and waived this privilege. It is apparent from his own writing that his daughter told him she saw Ms. Von Rell for the purpose of receiving ESA paperwork, as well as the costs and the technical problems that they both experienced. With all of this said, however, Ms. Von Rell understands the importance of confidentiality. She knows the rule and knows how to respond in the future by simply stating, according to federal and state laws, she cannot divulge any information. To conclude, it's very important to Ms. Von Rell that she keeps her license. She has been in this business for 50 years, and this is her life's work. She is planning to voluntarily attend a Staying Out of Trouble class in October of this year, and we believe that a non-disciplinary outcome is appropriate in this matter and will voluntarily stipulate to all necessary and recommended continuing education that the board deems appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions from board members for the professional and counsel?
I have a few. First of all, good morning, Ms. Von Rell. This is Mark Shen, I'm a professional member. First of all, I appreciate you engaging the process with the board. I just had a few questions about your progress notes. During board interviews, you mentioned that you do not always document a progress note for every session, and you identified that you intermittently complete progress notes. Can you talk through your process of doing progress notes for your sessions?
I'm not clear exactly what you're asking when you're asking to talk through the process of my progress notes. I have now got all my clients' notes up to date, and also I've backed off from seeing any new clients at all, and I recognize that I need to limit my client load. Now, I wasn't sure exactly what you meant about how I do my progress notes.
Well, I guess I just wanted to clarify. So you had identified to the board that you intermittently complete progress notes for sessions. So what is that? Can you clarify what that means? So in the past with clients, Did you not complete a progress note for every session with a client?
No, I didn't complete for every session.
So what was your process? How did you decide when to do a progress note?
Well, I do it like every other week, or like I was seeing a client every week, I'd do it every other week, or I just put down there supportive psychotherapy as what I was doing in my work with the client.
So can you see that there could be an issue due to time delay in the accuracy of your notes?
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
And how are you doing things? Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I just want to say that now I'm doing them. I'm doing my notes every week, and I'm up to date, and I have corrected my errors, and I stand corrected.
Okay. Thank you. And my other question was, what type of clientele do you currently see in your practice? Are you seeing adults, children?
I only see adults. I see adults. I also see couples.
Okay. And do you ever have family members or others whom a client, I guess, tells them about them being in treatment and they reach out to you to get information? And if so, how do you handle those situations?
Could you run that by me again?
Sure.
If I'm seeing a client and...
Absolutely. So let's just say you have a client, John Smith, fake client, and John Smith tells his mom that he's in therapy with you and gives her your number, and then the mom decides to reach out to you to get information about how her son is doing in treatment. How would you respond to that call?
I would have to say that that's confidential information, and I cannot share that information with the client, a mother.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have.
About that boundary, I understand the value of that boundary and that's very necessary.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Ms. Von Rau, this is Patricia, Board's chair.
Mm-hmm.
In the years that you've been practicing, can you describe how you've stayed current with clinical practices and board rules and regulations, documentation standards?
I feel I've been remiss in that to a certain extent, and even though every 2 years I have filled the, you know, like the last, I guess, renewing your license, I have had to, you know, pass the testing on the statutes. And I think that I've been remiss to some degree, that I should have reached out more and found out more about what exactly the board's rules and standards are. But I have, like I say, you know, last time and this time, there have been the statutes have been part of the renewal recommendation, and I have done them.
Thank you. Other questions from board members?
I have a quick question. Kim Bailey here, Ms. Von Rau. You do use the credential psychiatric social worker, and I'm just wondering if you can explain to me what that credential means.
I usually just say that I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I don't know exactly where you got that I put the psychiatric part of it. Did I say that in some way?
It appears to be on one of your ESA forms.
Oh, okay. Well, to me, I'm not sure about that verbiage, whether they're interchangeable, you know, whether I usually don't use that terminology. I'm surprised I did, actually. Maybe I was trying to, you know, get more, you know, validation or something. I don't know. But usually I just say, clinical social worker.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions from board members?
Ms. Van Rau, this is Lynette Hennigan, professional member. When you're doing intakes, or new assessments on new clients, and they disclose that they have a previous provider, do you ask them for a release so you can do some coordination of care to you talk with the previous provider to get any further information that may help you moving forward with treatment?
I can't say that I have done that. Now, I have, if I do need information of some about something, I will, of course, have them sign a release of information document. But I can't say that I have contacted previous therapists. That's what you're referring to, that the client has been involved with?
Yes, ma'am.
I had never know any idea that that was a requirement, is it?
It's not a requirement necessarily, but it is best practice, especially if someone's relocating here in this case, where they mm-hmm. had a previous therapist that said they
right.
needed an ESA. Getting
right.
some of that collateral information may have helped mitigate some of the issues in this situation, or getting some clear documentation.
Hold on for just one second. I'm just trying to clarify what you're saying. Could have mitigated. What was the next thing you said? I couldn't hear it acoustically. Could have mitigated what?
Could have mitigated or could have helped out in this situation with filling out the paperwork. For the
yes,
message.
I agree. I think I agree with that. It could have, yeah.
Any other questions from board members?
Sorry, Ms. Dobratz. I have one more question, Ms. Von Rauf, if you will allow. It's Kim Bailey here. You mentioned that you are currently working with couples. What are your recent training your training materials for doing couples work?
I did extensive training in Massachusetts, and it has been some time ago. It was about 2 weeks where we were working with couples every day. And it was in a gestalt format. That happens to be my background. I believe there were three psychologists who were running the school and the training that I did at that time. And it was pretty extensive. And I've also had a lot of training way back, because I'm 80 years old. But I had a month-long training, 3 month-long trainings in working with couples and also individual, and it's way back there for sure. But yeah, I've had a lot of training in doing therapy.
Any training with couples in the last 4 or 5 years?
I can't recall exactly. I've done a lot of different type of educational programs and. I'm not sure if any of them were specifically addressed to working with couples.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Any additional questions?
Oh, I do want to comment about working with couples.
Go ahead.
I do a lot of reading about Terry Real. He has extensive work with couples, and I do a lot of both reading and listening to his podcast, and I have done, I don't know if you call it official training, but I've listened to a lot of his podcasts about working with couples.
Thank you for clarifying.
Mm-hmm.
This will be the board's chance to talk amongst ourselves, so we ask that you stay on the line but not interrupt. And I believe this is yours, Mr. Chen, to lead the conversation.
It is. So I first want to start by kind of identifying the ESA letter. And, you know, and I've said this before, but I didn't see that there was obviously any malintent behind that, right? She thought she was doing the right thing and, you know, having a support animal to support this individual. So, you know, with that being said, there was good intent behind that. I also want to acknowledge that it looks like throughout this process, Ms. Von Rauf has been pretty cooperative, that she's identified there are issues, and she's identified that there are things she needs to change and improve upon. With all that being said, though, unfortunately, the violations did occur. These things did happen. So I do agree with the board's findings that there is evidence of unprofessional conduct. But before I make a motion, I wanted to see if my peers had anything to add to that before I make a motion.
I have to admit that as a person of a certain age, I can certainly identify with Ms. Von Rau. When you have been doing something for so long, you may not necessarily stay as current as some person who is fresher at doing whatever it is that's being done. And so I can appreciate that, and I can appreciate the difficulty of finding yourself in this kind of situation. So I respect the choices that she's made to get current and to pull it together, really, because it doesn't sound like she's going to stop. So.
Well, with all due respect, play devil's advocate, though. I mean, when we take on the responsibility to serve the public, and especially, I mean, it's highlighted by our role in regulating to protect the public, we have to stay current.
Yes.
You know, and we mandate that in the way that we, you know, require so many CEs every 2 years. I, for the record, that's not a box to just check off, right? That's important to the work that we do, and the public counts on us to do that. So I appreciate, how that can occur. It's imperative that we don't allow that to happen. Any other comments before we entertain a motion?
Yeah, so... I recommend that we find the licensee in violation of the following boundaries of competence, ARS 32-32-15-51-16M, in violation of contacting clients in defense of board complaint, ARS 32-32-51-16X, breach of confidentiality, ARS 32-32-15-51-16K, including 1.07 privacy and confidentiality. And last, in violation of documentation issues, ARS 32-32-51-16P.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Cassandra Parr.
Aye.
Heidi Quinlan.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion passes. Recommendations for how to move forward?
Yeah, so I recommend that we offer the licensee a consent agreement with the following requirements. Completion of the NASW staying out of trouble course. Completion of 3-credit or 3-hour training in HIPAA, privacy and confidentiality. Another 3-credit training in clinical documentation best practices. And then as noted in the investigation, I believe licensee also mentioned that it would be good for her to have a practice monitor. So I'd also recommend a practice monitor to look at documentation practices are in place and that they continue to be in place. And any other suggestions that my peers might have?
The length of time?
I would say 12 months.
Paula, do we need any more specifics on the practice monitor?
The frequency of the practice monitor?
What are the options? How does that work?
Typically, when we order a practice monitor, within the first 30 days, they're required to get an audit. And then once the audit, they'll determine an audit plan. You know, it depends on the egregiousness. Sometimes it's once a month. Sometimes it's twice a month.
Okay. I would say within the first 30 days, as you mentioned, and then at least once a month.
Or perhaps, okay.
I was going to say, would you be opposed to twice a month and then I would say for the first 3 months and then the practice monitor could make an adjustment if they feel it's appropriate to decrease? I would just like to stay on top of this so if we can.
I think that's a great idea. I agree.
So we would be offering the licensee a consent agreement for 12 months. She would be required to take 6 CEUs in staying out of trouble or the equivalent, 3 CEUs in HIPAA and privacy, 3 CEUs in clinical documentation and best practices. As well, she'll be required to get a practice monitor. That practice monitor
The frequency would be twice a month for the first 3 months, and at the practice monitor's recommendation, it can be no less than once monthly for the remaining 9 months. If not signed, invited to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remand to a formal hearing. Would that be your motion?
Yes, so moved.
Is there a second?
And again, second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Cassandra Park.
Aye.
Heidi Quinlan.
Aye.
Mark Shen.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion passes. Ms. Van Rauw, Ms. Moran, we appreciate you being here and speaking with us today. You will receive communication from the board in regards to next steps, and that will conclude this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, board members.
I think this is a good time for a break. Let's go to 10:30. It's 10:17, so we'll break right now. All right, we'll come back to order at 10:32. Mic's back on. And we will go to 7A, Christina Aguilar. And if you would both introduce yourselves for the record, please.
Chair, members of the board, Flynn Carey for licensee.
Christina Aguilar.
And we will hear a brief summary from board staff to get started.
Yes. This matter is before the board for review, consideration, and possible action regarding opening a complaint and accepting the proposed signed interim consent agreement. On 6/17/20, the board and licensee entered into a consent agreement. Within that consent agreement, the licensee was required to have therapy twice a month. In the 4/21 quarterly report, it was noted the licensee admitted to using drugs the past couple of months. Subsequently, board staff contacted licensee's attorney, who advised board staff licensee was currently in an inpatient setting to address her issues. On 4/23/21, Ms. Aguilar did agree to sign an interim consent agreement while she worked on her recovery efforts. An interim consent agreement for our new members basically means that her license is suspended, and when Ms. Aguilar chooses to come off of that suspension, she will have to come back to the board and show the board that she is safe and competent to practice. And that's all I have, unless you have questions for me.
Are there questions from board members? All right. Mr. Carey, you and your client have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Just very briefly, she's adhered to all recommendations and is now stepped down into other programming. We think this is, given this is a board of helping professionals, we think this is a good trajectory, doing an interim, letting her get some of the guidance she needs, and then returning to board staff and then ultimately to the board to go forward. So I think this is a good interim step. Obviously, I don't take a position on opening complaints. If that's something that the board felt it needed to do to have a place for this matter, I understand that may be the process. But otherwise, this is a work in progress, and I think it's going on the right direction.
Anything that you would add, Regular?
I just didn't have the right coping skills to deal with all that I've had to deal with my family, and I resorted to maladaptive behaviors, and I apologize, and I appreciate all the, all the consideration that you all have given to me, and I'm working diligently to resolve those situations and my past traumas, and so that I can move forward and be a really healthy, positive, contributing member to our field, which I really love and admire. And so I thank you for your time.
We appreciate that. Questions from board members? Procedurally, do we need two motions for opening the complaint and accepting the ICA, or can it be one motion?
We can just do one motion.
There's no discussion. We can entertain a motion, or if anybody has anything to add. Okay, fair motion.
I'll move it.
Move to open a complaint and accept the proposed ICA? Is there a second? Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Cassandra Parr.
Aye.
Heidi Quinlan.
Aye.
Mark Shen.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Mr. Carries, thank you for being here, and best of luck.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
To 7I, Tiffany, is the complainant in this matter present? Could you both introduce yourselves for the record?
Yes, good morning. Andrew Brevington, counsel for licensee.
And Tiffany, LPC.
All right, and we will get started with a brief summary from board staff.
Madam Chair, members of the board, following a review of the investigative record, there does not appear to be clear and convincing evidence to support the complainant's allegations. However, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 3232-5116-K, engaging in any conduct or practice that is contrary to recognized standards of ethics in the behavioral health field or that constitutes a danger to health, welfare, or safety of a client as it relates to the following section of the NASW Code of Ethics, A6D, and I apologize, that should be the ACA Code of Ethics, A6D, role changes in the professional relationship. This recommendation is based on the following. Between July 2020 and November 2020, licensee facilitated non-therapeutic divorce and trauma support groups. Four clients, AM, NS, KG, and TG, attended these support groups facilitated by licensee either while they were licensee's clients, before they were licensee's clients, or after they were licensee's clients. In November 2020, licensee and TG executed an informed consent for role change form, which indicated the following. The first consequence of the role change is that TG wishes to receive individual behavioral health services. She may no longer participate in the support group because this, quote, could potentially create an inappropriate dual relationship, end quote. Although she documented TG's role change, licensee did not complete a role change for AM, NS, or KG. Despite the requirements of Section A6D, licensee did not complete a role change for AM and NS at the time of the role change. Additionally, it is concerning that despite completing a role change form for TG that indicated TG could not concurrently be licensee's client and attend the support group, licensee did not complete a role change form for KG, who was, as of the date of this report, still licensee's client. It should be noted that after receiving a copy of this investigative report, licensee's attorney provided a supplemental response indicating the following. Not preparing a role change form for KG was an oversight, and licensee has cured this issue by preparing a role change form for KG, and that form has been provided to board staff. Licensee took remedial measures by completing the following courses after receipt of the board complaint. Three CEUs of Arizona statutes and regulations, the NASW staying out of trouble, and 6 1/4 clock hours in a course entitled Boundaries in Clinical Practice, Top Ethical Challenges. Additionally, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 323251K, as it relates to the ACA Code of Ethics, B1C, Respect for Confidentiality. This recommendation is based on the following. Between 2017 and 2021, licensee provided behavioral health services at agency. In February of 2020, licensee opened her private practice while concurrently working at agency. In November of 2020, KG transitioned from being licensee's client at agency to being licensee's client at her private practice. Licensee represented that she maintained a partial duplicate copy of agency's record as part of KG's file for the purpose of continuity of care. Licensee represented the following during her investigative interview. The practice at agency was for licensee to write electronic progress notes for clients on her personal computer, then send them to her supervisor to sign. because the licensee already had the progress notes in her possession, she would just put that progress note in her own file on her computer. Licensee acknowledges it was not her responsibility to maintain her own file for clients. Licensee still has all the files from all of her agency clients. Licensee supervisor at agency represented the following to board staff. Agency supervisor expected that licensee would have deleted these notes from her personal computer after sending them. Agency supervisor does not recall whether there was a written policy on retention of client records on licensee's personal computer. Licensee represented the following in a supplemental email response to board staff. Licensee maintains the files of her agency clients on her business laptop. The laptop is security enabled and encrypted. There are 237 agency client files on the laptop consisting of all the agency clients licensee has ever treated. When licensee opened her private practice, she was still treating 32 clients at agency. Licensee needed the clinical files for those clients to provide therapeutic care to those clients. Licensee believed that she was under the obligation to maintain agency files for 7 years for client confidentiality reasons. By maintaining duplicate client information on her laptop, licensee failed to protect the confidential information of 237 agency clients. It is problematic that licensee felt she needed her incomplete duplicate files to provide care to 32 active clients of agency when the complete and authorized client files were maintained by agency. Additionally, it is concerning that licensee, who was independently licensed by the board and in private practice, believed that it was statutorily obligated to maintain the incomplete duplicate agency files for 7 years. That's all board staff has, unless there are any questions for us.
Any questions from board members? You collectively have up to 6 minutes to address the board.
Thank you. Good morning. Chairperson Dobratz, members of the board, and board staff. Ms. Tiffany is going to read a brief statement, then I have some remarks before we turn it back to the board for questions. Go ahead.
Thank you all. Good morning, and thanks for giving me this opportunity. As a newer licensee, this experience has been extremely humbling, and it is definitely a learning experience for me. The proceedings have given me an opportunity to review and revise my forms. I do understand and have developed a knowledge that it is important to discuss and document any role changes with my clients moving forward, and also how important it is to have proficient processes in place for the confidentiality of my clients. Have made changes because of this to my practice, and it has benefited my clients and myself. It's made me a better behavioral health professional. And regardless of the outcome today of the disciplinary proceedings, I want to thank you for giving me an opportunity to grow in my practice.
Members of the board, this matter presents two categories of concern. There's the documenting role changes issue and the protecting confidential information issue. Now, as staff noted, the complainant's original allegations were not sustained. That's important. The investigative report notes there is no clear and convincing evidence to support finding any of the violations in the complaint. There are no allegations of standard of care issues here. It's also important that the violations recommended by staff were only discovered because Ms. Tiffany was completely transparent throughout this process. She cooperated fully. She offered information. She never tried to hide anything. Now, this demonstrates that she's somebody who wants to learn from her mistakes and better her practice. This proactive approach is the hallmark behavior of a licensee whom the board can comfortably feel will not be coming before it again. Her conduct throughout this has been to educate herself on the relevant issues to ensure future compliance. It's also important to note that none of her conduct here was the result of any deliberate or intentional efforts by her to ignore or skirt any applicable regulations or standards. Instead, her mistakes came from unfamiliarity as a newer LAC and now an LPC. She knows that's not an excuse, but it's an explanation for what occurred. This lack of intent and her willingness to adapt and learn from her mistakes demonstrates the board should view this matter through the lens of education and not discipline. Turning to the role change issue. As soon as she was aware of the problem with client TG, when she initially retained counsel and consulted, she had the role change form executed. That demonstrates that this is a licensee who is willing to accept advice and remedy the situations. The failure to execute role change forms for clients AM and AS was because they did not become a topic for discussion until months after the complaint was originally opened. By the time these clients became at issue in this matter, they had already terminated services with Ms. Tiffany, so there was no way to complete a role change form. As noted by staff, the fourth client, client KG, there was no role change form completed for that client. This was an oversight and not because Ms. Tiffany did not believe she needed to do one. Client KG was another client who came at issue months after the complaint when board staff noticed that she had made a comment on Ms. Tiffany's social media. So the focus on that client was with the dual relationship as a friend and also as a client and not the role change issue. Ms. Tiffany has now cured that issue by getting a role change form for KG, which we provided to the board. Turning to the respecting confidentiality or protecting confidentiality issue, Ms. Tiffany did volunteer that she still maintains on her laptop the clinical files for her clients from the agency that she had completed services with and also the ones she was ongoing. She believes she was following agency guidance in maintaining her files in this way. Again, not an excuse, but it's an explanation. She also thought she had an obligation to maintain those files for the clients that she was still providing therapeutic services for. Now, the investigative report alleges that by maintaining these files on her laptop, in addition to the agency maintaining them, she failed to protect the confidential information of the agency clients. Now, I know there have not been any identified breaches of confidentiality or any claim that she didn't protect the information. The laptop was purchased for business purposes, is used for business purposes, is security-enabled, encrypted, and password-protected. There is no evidence the laptop has been accessed by anyone other than Ms. Tiffany. Although the board has concerns and questions about this conduct, Ms. Tiffany did not actually fail to protect any confidential information. She maintained that information in a confidential manner on her security-enabled laptop. Therefore, in regards to the respecting confidentiality issue, we ask that the board does not sustain the K violation for this issue because there was no failure to protect confidentiality, just a misunderstanding on the procedures for the confidentiality. Any other documentation issues that were noted during the investigation have been cured, and Ms. Tiffany used this opportunity to update and revise her forms. There are a lot of moving parts to this matter, but as noted from a treatment perspective, there are no standard of care issues. The allegations in the complaint were not sustained. At the end of the day, this case turns on documentation and confidentiality issues, important issues, but issues that would not have been uncovered but for Ms. Tiffany's transparency with the board. These issues were related to her newly licensed status and not to any deliberate misconduct. Staff noted the significant steps she's noted to address these issues, including 15 hours of relevant CEU credits, as well as revising her forms.
We'll have to ask you to wrap up.
I have one small thing. I thought I'd get a minute warning. I apologize. I didn't hear that.
No.
There does not appear to be anything presently that requires remediation or monitoring. We submit that if there is further education that is required, that can be accomplished in a different manner through the use of an NDCA. We ask the board to consider an NDCA with 3 hours of CEU in confidentiality and 3 hours of CEU in documentation as a possible outcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from board members?
Have you engaged in
Okay, between becoming an LAC and an LPC, or after my LPC? I have consulted with my previous supervisor a few times.
And then I forget, I know the CE that you
Yeah, I did the staying out of trouble. I did the boundaries an ethical concern.
And also the statutes.
Yeah, and the Arizona statute tutorial.
And then if, looking back on this in hindsight, how would you describe now the groups that you work with?
I would continue to describe them as support groups. However, I would have received more consultation and support with the support group, just kind of what those procedures were in terms of current clients who were joining support groups and doing those role change forms and things like that. So I probably would have gotten more counsel and more supervision around what a group would look like and what kind of group I was setting up.
What did you do any prior research or consult to before you set up
the group? I didn't do any specific consultation with anyone around the group, although my colleagues and my supervisor were aware that I was doing support groups, and it seemed to be a great idea at the time.
And then you were charging them, and you asked for, like, a suggested donation.
Yeah, the divorce one was free, and then the trauma one I just asked for a suggested donation.
And where did those funds go?
To me, to my business bank account.
So you were kind of charging?
I guess, yeah.
And then you said you had set topics.
Yeah, I didn't have set topics. I just had a list. I'm sure you can see that there's kind of a list of open topics that are kind of common topics with people who have experienced trauma, safety, trust, power and control, those types of things. So it was almost like these are the things we could talk about if we wanted to. You know, if the group brought up something about safety because it was around COVID, right, and their fears and frustrations and things around that, then we could center that around that particular topic. There wasn't a set agenda. Sorry for interrupting.
No,
there wasn't a set agenda for every day. It was just an open, these are things we could possibly discuss, and sometimes we didn't discuss any of it.
One of the members that initiated or facilitated?
No. No, I would just come on and say, I'm not your therapist. That was, I believed that that was clear, and just kind of went around, you know, in the boxes because it was on Zoom, right? So who wants to talk today? What's going on in your life? And then they engaged with each other.
And when you were at ATC, did they, how often did you have to see them?
Weekly? No, it was weekly, and then it turned into monthly.
Individual group?
Individual.
Okay. Did a documentation ever come up about the record keeping?
No. Never just since 2017 when I started my internship with them, that was the procedure that I was told to continue, and I continued doing it until...
Questions from other board members?
This will be our chance to talk amongst ourselves, so we ask that you not interrupt. And Ms. Quinlan, I believe you're leading this discussion.
Again, similar to the last one, I do appreciate the changes that have been made. Anything, it shows a desire to grow and learn. There were, I guess, the concern that I have through the whole thing is that doesn't appear to be a lot of self-initiation to consult, get supervision and kind of asking questions about maybe what she doesn't know. And really appreciating how important and useful that can be. And I think that tends to be the underlying factor in all of this, is saying, hey, you know, I'm going to see how everybody else does this, and I'm going to reach out and just make sure that I'm crossing all my T's and dotting all my I's. Clearly, I mean, there's a lot of things that could have been cleared up had she asked a few questions, and we probably wouldn't be here today. A lot of that, especially with the group stuff, I mean, we clearly were not, I mean, the divorce one maybe, but if you're facilitating, I mean, peer-led groups are peer-led. And so even going into that, it, you know, doing a little bit more research, you know, leave it to them. You introduce the group and you leave it to them, and, you know, here, you guys take turns, or maybe setting up the format for them and letting it go. But then when you get into charging and everything else, and having the topics, I mean, clearly this is more, I mean, every single thing I read said psychoeducational groups. And not really a peer, that's not a peer-like group, especially when you're charging stuff. So again, it just, to me, just came down to everything, even not asking about the records. You know, obviously those records were ATC clients, not her clients. And so it just seems like these are things that should have been asked, or clarified. Again, I just think that there's an insecurity about asking for help. So I would really, I think, in order to help this professional stay out of trouble in the future, really learning to appreciate that resource. So unfortunately, again, kind of like the last, there have been changes made, and unfortunately, perhaps the violations did occur. So I can't say that they didn't. But again, you know, we're here to be a learning opportunity and not to dissuade people from making mistakes. We all make mistakes. So I don't, again, want to emphasize this isn't a failure, this is a great opportunity. So I do find in violation, make the motion to find in violation of the ARS 32-32-51-16-8 role changes. Again, a documentation piece. That really was very concerning to me because clearly this acquaintance, friend, whatever role that was, there was a knowledge that there was some trauma there, so clearly there is a boundary violation that she... I was concerned because she said there wasn't any evidence of damage, but yet she talked about it in therapy, so clearly there was. So that's very concerning to me. And also the protecting confidential information found in violation, ARS 32-32-51-16. So I would make a motion to find it.
Madam Chair, for the record, could we add, as it relates to KB1C as well as A6D? Thank you.
Is there a second?
Kunran, I'll second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Cassandra Parr.
Aye.
Heidi Quinlan.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion passes. Discussion of where to go from here.
Well, I would like to offer a consent agreement. That is heavy on supervision. I would like to do a 2-year consent agreement with supervision starting at least at twice a month, and then maybe after the first 6 months, 2 years, with an option for early release depending on the supervisor's recommendation, which would focus on roles and boundaries, group ethics, record keeping, documentation, possibly some counter transference in there. And then I'd also like to do a 3-credit graduate course in ethics, as well as 3 clock hours of group ethics, and 3 clock hours of the record keeping documentation again. So
I like that you added the group ethics, because that was of concern. So I like that you added the group one.
had changed. Do you want to read that back to us, Ms. Sabala?
Give me one moment, please.
Absolutely.
I do have a clarifying question. I think what I heard you say, Ms. Quinlan, was that the CA would be for 24 months.
Yes.
The first 6 months, she would be required twice a month, but after 6 months, at the recommendation of the clinical supervisor?
Going down.
Okay, so at 6 months, at the recommendation, it could less to no less than once a month? Okay, and could there be early release after 12 months? So we would be offering the licensee a consent agreement for 24 months. She'd be required to complete a 3-credit graduate level course in behavioral health ethics, 3 CEUs in group ethics, 3 CEUs in documentation. She also would be required to get clinical supervision. The first 6 months would be at a minimum of twice a month. At the recommendation of the clinical supervisor, it can be no less than once a month. For the next 6 months, and after that, at the recommendation of the clinical supervisor, she could be released after 12 months. The focus would be on group ethics, role boundaries, countertransference, board statutes and rules, and documentation. And if not signed, invited to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remanded to a formal hearing. Would that be your motion?
Did you read the education?
Education part?
I did the 3-credit, yes.
Okay. I lost you there for a second.
Clock hours.
The clock hours for group ethics, clock hours for documentation, and a 3-credit graduate level course in behavioral health ethics.
Okay.
All good?
Yeah. Yes.
We've dissociated.
Sorry. Is that your motion, Ms. Quinlan?
Yes.
Is there a second?
And again, second.
And second. And roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Cassandra Parr.
Aye.
Heidi
Quinlan.
Aye.
Mark Shen.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Thank you for being here. We appreciate it. Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Another board member joining us, so we will give Ms. Kramer a moment to get settled. While she is doing that, we'll go to 7H, Mr. Smith. And just for the record, we are tabling this matter, so we won't be hearing Mr. Smith's case this meeting. Holtz? Next will be, and let the record reflect that Ms. Kramer is now present to participate, and Mr. Carey is here appearing for Ms. Weatherholt.
That's correct.
Can we hear a brief summary from board staff?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. This matter is before the board for review, consideration, and action regarding whether to open up a complaint against the licensee. On 4/16/21, board staff received a supervised private practice request from a supervisee. Licensee was listed as the proposed clinical supervisor on the request, despite licensee not meeting the requirements. Upon board staff's research, it appeared supervisee has been practicing in a private practice setting prior to receiving approval for supervised private practice and receiving his LAC license on 2/1/21. On 4/20/21, licensee disclosed the following to the board's executive director during a phone call. She knew she did not meet the supervised private practice supervisor requirements, and she's been providing clinical supervision to supervisee since 2/21 for private practice. And she rented out space to supervisee. And just as a reminder, members, this is for the board's consideration to open up a complaint. Board staff would do a further investigation and bring it back before the board at that time.
Are there any questions for Ms. Sabala? All right, Mr. Carey, you have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. This is agendized as an opening, so I don't really have a lot of standing to get into detail. As our counsel, I have to request you don't open a complaint. Other than that, I have no other comments at this time.
Questions from board members? All right. We will go into our discussion now. Ms. Kramer, welcome, and I believe this is yours to lead the discussion.
Hi, everyone. Sorry I'm late. I reviewed the materials, and I do think there's enough to open a complaint. I didn't really have any questions. I know I don't believe Mr. Carey even has any of the documents yet because we haven't opened the complaint. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah. So I have no questions, and I would like to see us open a complaint on this one unless anyone else has anything to add. Okay. day. I move that we open a complaint.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Mr. Carey, you might be able to sit right there. Give me 1 second. Are you appearing on 7D?
I am not.
Okay, then you can't sit there. You need to go back.
And I understand.
We will come back to you.
I'll return to my chair.
All right. So we will go to 7D. Am I saying that correctly, butchering it? 7D?
Right.
I'm present.
I don't think so.
All right. So we will hear a brief summary from board staff.
So very similar to the last case, this is brought before you to consider opening up a complaint. Facts are very similar. Licensee got his license in 2-1 of 21. Board staff received a supervised private practice request on 4-16-21. On 4-16-21, board staff received licensee's application for supervised private practice, listing the previous licensee as his supervisor. Upon review of his private practice website, it appears the licensee was actively providing psychotherapy in a private practice setting as a lower-level licensee. On 4-22-21, board staff initiated a phone call with licensee in which licensee was providing psychotherapy, coaching, and mentoring services through private practice. Since 2-1 of 21, licensee has seen 2 to 3 psychotherapy clients at private practice. Licensee did not begin providing psychotherapy until his LAC was approved by the board. A majority of licensee's clients at private practice were coaching or mentoring clients. And the supervisor also provided supervision pertaining to licensee's coaching and mentoring clients. I'd also like to just bring you to the attention to the additional information that board staff found in regards to the Arizona Corporation Commission private practice website, licensee's Instagram profile, his Psychology Today profile, his LinkedIn profile, et cetera. It appears that not only was he practicing psychotherapy beginning in February, but possibly for years prior. I would also like to bring to your attention that on 4-22, after speaking with licensee, board staff investigator reached out to Mr. Parody several times in request of information via email and phone calls with no response. I myself personally have left 2 voicemails as well as 2 emails with no response from Mr. Parody since that time. Again, this is before the board to determine whether they want to open up a complaint or not.
Thank you, Ms. Valla. Any questions? Kramer, to you again.
For the same reasons, I would move that we open up a complaint.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Next, we'll go to 7F, Valerie Pacelli. Could you say it for me one more time?
Piacitelli.
Piacitelli. All right. I suppose I should have asked, I apologize, is the complainant in this matter present? Or present? Did you wish to address the board? Okay. I'm sorry. Can I ask you to take your seat? I got ahead of myself. Is it Mr. Cordova?
Yes.
All right. We are going to first hear a brief summary from board staff.
Following a review of the investigative record, there does not appear to be clear and convincing evidence to support the complainant's allegations. However, following review of the investigative record, it does appear there's clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 32-3251-16K, engaging in any conduct or practice that is contrary to recognized standards of ethics in the behavioral health profession as it relates to the following sections of the NASW Code of Ethics, 1.07, Privacy and Confidentiality. This recommendation is based on the following. From 9/21/20 to 9/25/20, licensee provided behavioral health services at agency. Despite having left agency months earlier on 12/20, licensee provided clients clinical records as part of her written response to the board complaint. During her 3/21 investigative interview, licensee acknowledged still having access the client's clinical records. Licensees following representations during her investigative interview are concerning. Licensee saved client's records in her personal email account. Licensee estimates she maintained a total of approximately 16 client records from agency in her personal email. It was appropriate to keep client records in case she needed them. Licensee was worried about ethical concerns at agency, and she had no malicious intention behind saving various client records to her personal email. Licensee did this as a way to keep records for herself since her name was attached to these records. Licensee also kept these records in case agency would not pay her for the services she provided while employed. Licensee has maintained the confidentiality of these records because no one has access to her computer or email. After her investigative interview, licensee emailed board staff the following explanations regarding why she maintained client records. Agency did not provide licensee a laptop. Licensee was a contractor and retained information for 15 agency clients for tax and audited purposes. Licensee signed an agreement with agency requesting she destroy documentation unless there was a legal purpose to maintain them. However, licensee chose to keep the records since agency provided to be proved to be unethical, and licensee felt she needed to protect her license. Licensee will delete the client files upon closure of this board complaint. By sending and maintaining confidential client information to her personal email account, licensee failed to protect the confidential information of 15 agency clients. Additionally, it is concerning that licensee appears to place her desire to protect herself from agency and this board complaint above client confidentiality by continuing to maintain client information in her personal email account. Furthermore, it is concerning that her written response to this board complaint, licensee indicates she's willing to involve her clients in this investigation by having them provide letters of reference. And that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Are there any questions from board staff or from board members for board staff? All right. Mr. Cordova, you have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
I came...
You're doing better than I did.
In regards of seeing my children with a do not consent, I did sign a do not consent. My mother signed them up to be seen by Alien Health, and when it was she was referred to Alien Health. I signed a do not consent because I didn't really make it necessary for my children to be seen. After that, I got a phone call that she was going to be seeing my children anyway. It was not from her, it's from Hayes. I never once discussed anything about background or anything on my children. I feel it's very, I think it's very necessary when working with children to be able to speak to both parents to understand the children from both lights, you know, when it comes to any type of medical needs for a child. And I felt like I wasn't, my advocacy for my children was not respected when it came to the need for my children. Something different needs to happen for sure when it comes to seeing children, being able to talk to parents. The consent is a big thing. I didn't know it was necessary, and I had someone else in mind that I wanted to use for therapy in this country.
Questions from board members? All right. Thank you for being here. If you'll take your seat, please. And if the licensee would come forward again. Please introduce yourselves for the record.
Good morning, everybody. Brian Antall for licensee Valerie Piacitelli.
What was your last name?
Antall, A-N-T-O-L.
Thank you. And you have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Members of the board, it's important to start with the fact that the basis for the complaint was unfounded. Importantly, my client was only employed there for 5 days at the agency. This meeting happened when she was no longer employed, and so that's why the basis was not found to find a violation of that complaint. Also important to note is since 2003, my client has been a licensed social worker. Up until last June, she was on the national board for NASW. She takes her ethical obligations very seriously, and that's why in regards to this investigation, the first investigation of her career, she gave over everything that she could. She's been full and frank with the board. The challenge, I think, in this case is that She worked for agency for 5 days. And in feeling her, in listening to her intuition, her observations as to agency, she understood that they weren't adhering to her ethical standards. And I think that's clear in looking at the basis of the complaint, that this person believes that this meeting happened when my client wasn't even employed there. That's how disorganized agency was in this realm. My client did provide the assessment to agency, and that somehow didn't make it to the file either. And so in looking at how she felt about agency and how she left within 5 days, she listened to herself and she said, these people aren't doing the job that should be done correctly, and she left. She kept the files on her personal computer that she had to do because they didn't provide her a computer. She lives alone. It's password protected. There was no breach. When she says that her name was attached to these, what she really means is that she wanted to maintain client files to make sure they're complete and accurate to the best of her ability. And so I think today we're asking the board for guidance on how to proceed further. Thank you.
Any questions from board members?
I have a couple. Kim Bailey here. I am not going to try to botch your last name, so forgive me. I had a couple points of clarification, though, to help me understand. Help me understand why keeping records that actually, I'm sure, in a lot of documentation from the agency say they are property of the agency. Can you just explain, in your words, why you still felt you need to keep those? They're not your property.
Well, first of all, the agency stated they would give me a laptop. They did not. The agency hired me as an employee, and then upon my leaving, moved me to contractor. And so my concern was for my own audits or, you know, and again, as Mr. Antal said, I felt the agency, having been in this field for quite some time, recognized that they were not very organized, and I did not keep the records, you know, intentionally thinking I would be here before the board. I kept the records because if I were to be audited, and I also wasn't getting paid by this company and wanted to make sure that I was getting paid for the clients that I saw, which still has not occurred.
Did you keep a complete record?
Not sure what you mean by that.
Informed consents, do you have the, like, not just, you know, whatever?
I only had what I sent back to the agency.
Okay.
They would send me a referral. I would do the assessment and sign certain intake documents and then scan that back to the agency.
All the information.
And there were no names on my computer. It's, you know, you wouldn't know that. And you wouldn't be able to access it. I live alone. My computer is protected. Also, it's important to know that I left that job and went immediately to another job the next Monday. So I'm not thinking, oh, I got to get that stuff off my computer. And as agreed at the end of this hearing, or I'm not sure what you call this, meeting, that I would completely delete them. I'd also like to say that if indeed a non-consent was signed, I'm not sure why the agency even sent me that client to. I never saw the non-consent. And why would the agency send me a client? So that really concerned me and made me feel, you know what, something's wrong here.
Sure. So just to make sure that I'm understanding you, you kept the records under the premise of I was changed to a contract worker, which does change the responsibility.
Yes.
Under.
Yeah, I was hired as an employee.
Sure.
And
okay.
Upon asking for my paycheck, was changed to a contractor.
And so what I think I'm hearing is that is what prompted you to say I need to keep up the records since I'm a contract worker. I would be expected then to maintain my records.
That's correct.
Okay, very good. Let's see. that was it for me. Thank you. You actually answered my other question within that, so thank you.
Any additional questions? I just want to note that we oftentimes will have conversations of people that, licensees that appear before us that continue to work for agencies that don't have ethical practices and are torn and in a bind, and we often have that discussion of they had the opportunity to leave, but difficulty in making that decision. And so I just want to acknowledge that difficult choice and leaving a place that was not utilizing ethical standards. There's no further questions, then.
You did, absolutely. The second point I had just for clarification to ask you for was just your thoughts about maybe soliciting clients for a reference, you know, for supporting information on your behalf. Just what are your thoughts?
I have absolutely no documentation of reference letters. I may have said supervisees, but I don't have any. I would never say that. I am a supervisor. I have been on the board. I know that that's not ethical, and I think that was either something that was taken mistakenly. I don't possess any letters of reference from clients.
And Madam Chair, Dr. Bailey, it was actually in her written response, number 8.
On what page?
But I don't have any, so.
Page 2.
My apologies. I mean.
From 618 to 620, licensee was a board member of the NASW and could provide letters of reference from colleagues and or clients who she has served.
And I think I meant supervisees.
Thank you, Ms. Zavala. Any additional questions? All right. This is going to be our time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt.
I do agree that there was not clear and convincing evidence throughout the investigation for the complaint. So that I just kind of want to open with that. As far as the confidentiality issue, I'm really torn because
I'm sorry to interrupt, but just to note so that I don't forget on that issue though, too, for the record, you know, the complainant, Mr. Cordova, I don't think that alleviates concerns that we may have against the agency for the way that they handled
it
versus the licensee. So I want to note that on the record.
Yes, I'm going to guess the consent was actually not read through. It just looked like a signature and we moved on. Yep. So, yes, I would agree with that. Thank you. I do have a concern, though, or what's bringing up for me is, and I don't have a lot of expertise on, I don't want to claim to have a lot of expertise in small business law or anything like that, but it is bothersome that agencies use contract workers and employees very loosely. And if you read through, again, no expertise on my end, just what I can, as a layman clinician, what I can find out is, you know, if we are a contract worker, you are more in charge of your work. You're more in charge of the files. And I don't think anyone actually reads that or knows that that's part of the difference between employees and contract workers. And there is a part of me that has some compassion for if I got switched to a contract worker all of a sudden, what am I going to do to protect myself because of the definitions of contract workers? And so I kind of came in today with a little bit of a different thought and had some education and whatnot. But when I hear that, I have to say, in all fairness, that is a concern for employers, right? And how do I pay my employees, and are they employees, and what does that actually mean in their job description? And so when I hear that there's some thought process of, I was changed to a contract worker, now what do I need to do to protect myself? I don't think this agency is going to protect me at all. I've had 4 days here. It's not looking good. I've had some ethical concerns. There is a part of me that has some compassion for this line of thinking. So I'm prepared to offer a non-disciplinary consent agreement with some education. I think that would be really helpful. But I don't know that due to some of the concerns around maybe the change in her status of employment that it warrants the disciplinary part.
Input from others?
Completely agree with that, because I have the same.
Yeah, I agree with Dr. Bailey.
Okay. Okay. So I would say that I move to offer an non-disciplinary NDCA.
Correct.
The licensee.
And what within that NDCA we can only offer education?
Yeah, I had that. And so I had three things I thought would be helpful. Just I did feel like just that staying out of trouble would be helpful, or the equivalent. Just six CEs on confidentiality and privacy, just to get real, just refresh on all of that. And then working with families and children of divorced parents. If we are going to work with this population, I think it's incredibly helpful to have training specifically for that.
And was that three?
I had six, really, for all three. Uh-huh.
So we would be offering a non-disciplinary consent agreement, and she would be required to take six contact hours and staying out of trouble with the equivalent, six contact hours in confidentiality and privacy, and six contact hours in working with families and divorce.
Or co-parents.
Co-parents.
Yep. I didn't say that, but that's a better term for it.
And if not signed, invited to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remand to a formal hearing. Would that be your motion?
That would be. Thank you.
Is there a second?
Second, Trotter.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you both for being here. Mr. Cordova, thank you for being here. And this will conclude this matter.
Thank you.
We will move to 7G. Mr. Reyna. And I believe that we're going to try and reach the complainant via phone. Is that correct?
Yes, we're going to attempt one time. For the record, the complainant is a nurse and is working today and was not able to get off. So we advised her that we were going to try one time if she answers, if not.
And for the record, I believe Ms. Parr is going to be recusing.
Yes. Thank you.
Hi, this is Daniela.
Hi, this is Patricia. I'm the board chairperson, and we were just getting ready to hear the matter that you are a part of. We will, out of respect for privacy, refer to you by your initials, DB, if that is okay with you.
Yeah, that's fine. Unfortunately, I'm able to get today off. I'm a nurse. I work at a hospital. And I put myself on the phone list in case I was to get it off, but I'm not going to be able to be there.
That's it. Did you need to, are you going to stay on? I'm sorry, you were cutting out a little bit. Are you going to be able to stay on and hear the case, or did you need to go?
I'm on the AQ.
Yeah.
Did you hear me? Sorry.
That's awful.
Hello.
She's in.
Hello.
You're not going to be able to participate. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Well, we will have the board investigator reach out to you after after today's meeting and let you know the outcome. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Right,
thank you.
That's difficult for me here. All right. So we are going to start with a brief summary from board staff, then, please.
Following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violations. ARS 32-3251-6L, engaging in any conduct, practice, or condition that impairs the licensee to safely and competently practice, as well as ARS 32-3251-16Q, failing or refusing to maintain adequate records or behavioral health services provided to a client. Factors for the board to consider: from 8/19 to 4/20, licensee provided behavioral health services to complainant. At some point, complainant requested to end sessions by hugging licensee. It is concerning that licensee accepted complainant's request for hugs despite complainant's boundary issue with men regularly led her to seek acceptance through physical and sexual contact. In 3/5/20, licensee and complainant exchanged the following text messages. Licensee text, "By the way, you can randomly call me, text me, and email me whenever you want. I like it."
Complainant attached a heart emoji to licensee's text message and replied with the following: I don't have full understanding about the professional appropriate boundaries in regards to communication. Feel free to draw whatever boundary needed. Licensee's reply included the following: Dual relationships are permitted as long as they do not cause harm to the client. If you feel that crossing certain boundaries will hinder therapy, then it is appropriate. If you find no reason to file a complaint against me, then it's cool. Licensee represented the following regarding the March 5th, 2020 text messages. Licensee does not recall texting complainant. Licensee would not have text complainant unless it was about a session. Licensee indicated the following regarding the you can randomly call me, text me, email me, or whenever you want, I like it text. This was not a personal conversation. It was in context of the complainant reaching out for licensee to provide support. Licensee was validating the fact that the complainant had reached out to help for help and support. Licensee was letting complainant know she matters. Licensee indicated the following regarding the text message about dual relationships. Dual relationships are not necessarily a problem. That's actually written in the ACA guidelines, not harm to the client. Licensee was asking complainant to tell him where she was comfortable or uncomfortable. Licensee is not removed from the situation and also has the right to have a say in boundaries. When board staff pointed out all clients are vulnerable to some extent and any type of dual relationship has a potential for harm, licensee stated that's debatable. Licensee's text messages exchanged with complainant is problematic for the following reasons. Licensee use of word randomly when telling complainant that she can call, text, or email licensee appears to contradict his representation that he text was strictly related to professional services. Despite complainant replying with his following, licensee maintains this was not a personal exchange. Complainant attached a heart emoji. Complainant indicated she did not have a full understanding of professional boundaries, and licensee should feel free to draw the needed boundaries. It is concerning that when given the opportunity to draw appropriate boundaries, licensee's reply included the following: dual relationships are permitted. If complainant does not feel there's a reason to file a complaint, then it's not a problem. Additionally, it's concerning that licensee's analysis of boundaries and dual relationships appears to factor in whether his actions would make complainant uncomfortable enough to file a board complaint. It is also concerning that licensee feels the following is debatable. All clients are vulnerable. Any type of dual relationship has for potential harm. Furthermore, it is especially concerning that it appears that licensee refuses to acknowledge that complainant is vulnerable to boundary issues despite documenting the following in her clinical record. Licensee helped complainant explore her relationship history and her need to always be infatuated with someone. Licensee helped complainant notice the relationship between her carnal desires and her desire to be appreciated and accepted. Complainant shared thoughts on finding acceptance through being wanted in relationships. Complainant shared about struggles in communication and inquired into concepts that can help her decide appropriate boundaries. 2 days after the March 5th, 2020 text message exchange, licensee attended a going-away barbecue for complainant. Licensee represented the following regarding the barbecue. During the 3-5-20 session, complainant invited licensee and his family to the barbecue. Licensee stopped by the barbecue without his family at the very end and stayed 5 to 10 minutes. It was only therapeutic in the sense that licensee was offering complainant support. It is curious that 2 days after he text complainant that dual relationships were permitted, licensee chose to attend a barbecue that by his own account had minimal therapeutic value. It is also curious that licensee's late night sessions with complainant went past the scheduled hour by as much as 60 minutes without incurring extra charges. Additionally, licensee offered complainant pro bono telehealth sessions when she moved from Arizona. Licensee represented the following regarding providing extra uncharged time and pro bono sessions. Licensee does not typically watch the clock with his clients. This is true for all licensee's clients. Offering a client more time or a free session is powerful and important. Licensee did not charge clients for the additional time if sessions ran long. Licensee did not document when sessions ran past the scheduled time in the progress note. Licensee offered pro bono telehealth services to complainant as she temporarily had no income or insurance. Licensee would absolutely offer pro bono services to other clients. During their pro bono telehealth session on 4/15/20, complainant alleged that licensee made the following statement to her: emotionally, you're beautiful, mentally, you're fun, spiritually, you're on fire, kind of intimidating, and physically, you are gorgeous, and if you don't believe me, you can move the camera up and down, and I'll tell you. Licensee represented the following regarding the alleged 4/15/20 statement. Complainant was struggling with insecurities, and licensee was repeating holistic feedback that she had received from friends and her significant other. The feedback included positive affirmations about her physically, intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually. Complainant was very aware that licensee was quoting things that other people had said to complainant and that these were not his own words. Licensee denied saying the last part of the quote, "You can move the camera up and down and I'll tell you." It is problematic that licensee's exclamation regarding some of the statements attributed to him do not appear in the corresponding progress note. Specifically, the 4/15/20 progress note does not include any of the following information: licensee giving complainant any feedback whatsoever, licensee quoting what others had said about the complainant, and licensee providing any kind of positive affirmations. In addition to the comments licensee represents where feedback based on quotes from other people, licensee used the terms boob and blowjob while providing therapy to complainant. Licensee represented the following regarding using the terms. The statements were made during statements under gestalt principles. Complainant initiated the conversation about boobs when talking about a woman she saw when viewing pornography. Since complainant focused on the woman's breasts, licensee questioned if complainant was insecure about her breasts. Licensee would have only used the term boobs if that term was what the complainant used. Complainant brought up and used terminology fairly regularly as part of her history or as a behavior she was engaged in. Licensee would then ask complainant why she was bringing this topic up and if this was a concern of hers. Licensee stated that he was much more lax with complainant than with other clients. It is problematic. It appears licensee is trying to justify using the terms during a session because complainant used the terms first. While licensee argues he is justified using these terms during sessions, complainant's client record only includes clinical terms such as oral sex. It stands to reason that licensee should use the same clinical terms when having sessions with complainant, which he deems appropriate when documenting the sessions in the complainant's client record. Furthermore, although licensee represents all of his interactions with complainant were professional and clinically appropriate, it is problematic that he failed to document the following in the complainant's client record. Licensee's hugs with client, as well as his justification for allowing the hugs. Licensee's text messages exchanges with complainant. Attending complainant's barbecue and providing extended free sessions and pro bono sessions to complainant. And that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Are there questions from board members? Ms. Arena, you have up to 8 minutes to address the board.
Throughout the entire therapeutic relationship, I, by a relaxed approach, was using that client-directed approach in which the client was allowed to talk about what the client felt the client needed to talk about. And to say that I used the same language that the client was using is also misrepresenting, because my follow-up questions would be, again, is this something that is of concern to you? Why is this a topic for today? What about this do we need to explore, not having conversations that are sexually oriented? We met for a course of approximately 4 months, at which the client reported significant progress in challenging her shame and building her self-empowerment. And I sought the client's best interest at every turn. I did not have a dual relationship with the client. The only potential dual relationship that exists is that we attended the same church, but we did not have personal or professional interactions at that church.
Board members, have any questions for Mr. Arena?
I have a few questions, Mr. Arena. Can you maybe clarify a little bit your comment of I was more lax with this client? Why was that?
The word I used with her was relaxed, because I didn't say Rogerian client-centered approach, where I let the client completely direct that course, every single topic in the direction and what she wanted to bring into session. Obviously, with other clients, sometimes there's more of a DBT focus, there's more of an EMDR focused. It's not as relaxed. I didn't use technical jargon with the client.
And in your mind, if we're using Gestalt therapy or Rogerian therapy, does it feel like the boundaries get relaxed?
How do you mean?
When I'm hearing you kind of just talk about these two styles of these two models,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just getting this kind of sense of it's a more relaxed environment and they can talk about whatever they want to talk about. Does that also loosen up boundaries that we would have within the therapeutic relationship just because of those two models?
No, I would say in the Gestalt approach, there'd be more focus in on the relationship in the room, in the here and now, talking about how the client was experiencing that emotion in the room with me. And so while that is not typical with like a cognitive behavioral approach, focusing in on the emotions between client and therapist, that Gestalt approach gave her the chance to be able to explore in the present the emotions that she was experiencing to try and challenge that shame in the present. And so in that sense, yes, but no, there's not a new set of boundary guidelines based on your therapeutic approach.
Okay, so maybe the boundaries of holding the therapeutic time, the financial agreement, you know, those were not relaxed due to your model choice.
I mean, emphasizing the here and now relationship and validating the client more than just what the client was paying, and not cutting the client off, and having that, not quite as much pearls, but more Martin Buber, the I-thou interaction in which there is the meeting and not focusing in on trying to step out of that meeting as quickly as possible. To try and use that as a chance to validate the client that what the client is saying matters, not just according to what the clock time says.
And additionally, do you feel your documentation adequately represents those two areas that you've just clarified with me?
Off the top of my head, I couldn't answer that exactly.
Any reason, can you just talk a little bit more about attending the barbecue? Like, why go to a social event with our clients?
This was a very big change in her life that we had discussed in treatment. She was making a major change and was terrified of it. She described it as an open house out in a public place, out on a lawn, come by, stop by, leave. There was nothing formal about it at all. And I wanted to be able to encourage the client in, through her insecurities of making this big, making this big change, to just wish her well, goodbye, good luck.
And do you think that could have appropriately been done within the therapeutic time?
Yes, and I said all of those things in the therapeutic time as well. I thought the act of showing up would offer just a further validation. Again, I didn't disclose who I was, and it was a short good luck.
So even though we don't disclose who we are at a social situation, do you not think that behind the scenes questions like who is that or who's that guy, do you not think that that could happen?
There were a lot of people there who didn't all know each other. Again, this was an open house, not a formal event, out in public, and I didn't see any concerns of that happening. Again, at a very public place where there were lots of people all around.
Sure. Okay, so that just leads me to ask, just if somebody did come up to you and ask, how do you know the complainant? How would you have answered that?
I've known the complainant for a while and just wanted to wish her, farewell.
I would love for you to speak a little bit more on your thoughts that dual relationships are okay, as long as they don't cause harm to the client.
The dual relationship at hand was that we both attended the same church. And that was something that was discovered accidentally through the course of treatment. So the examples that I have heard time and time again through different like Psychology Today articles and whatnot, are these interactions at, there's one I used during the interview, where a social worker, I believe in New York, was attending an event, a public event, and saw a client saw them, there was eye contact made, and for fear of that dual relationship, social worker ran away, which caused harm to the client, then it furthered that sense of rejection. And so the dual relationship at hand is, well, what happens if I see you at church? Well, I had attended already for a year, didn't know that she went there. We never saw each other before. But will I just run away and ignore her? No. And in my informed consent, it even says, you know, I'm not going to initiate these conversations, and they will be brief. And there was one or two times where that did occur, where as we walked out of church, we did happen to see each other, and she said hi, I said hi, and we continued on our way. That's the only dual relationship that I saw a potential for, and is, I believe, that to be permitted and not providing, you know, not putting the client in a vulnerable stance. I have no other relationship with the client.
Do you feel your documentation would accurately reflect that you had that conversation with her and it was specific to attending church, the church that you both attended to?
No, I don't think it accurately represents that.
And then I think I would love some clarification on the, you kind of allude, like, if you don't think it's a problem, then everything will be okay. If you can kind of clarify why we would put that responsibility on the client.
Something that I wish I had worded significantly differently. But to again, focus everything on empowering the client that she has the right to make choices. She has the right to speak her mind. She has the right to bring up topics, that she didn't have to ask permission in session to bring up topics, and that she doesn't have to ask permission about those boundaries, that she can express those from her sense of empowerment. This is what I wanted to express.
And in light of thinking about the reasons why your client came to seek help from you, do you think that that would potentially be difficult for a client in that position to then be assertive?
That was something that we were consistently working on, and client was reporting progress in, and I didn't see all that at the time. I was more helping the client focus in on having the right to speak and have her place.
Now that we're through this process and kind of here today, do you think that it would be logical, that it would be difficult for a client to midway let you know that harm is being felt by some of the things that might be said or done within the therapeutic process?
Yes. My caveat to that is that there had been a lot of positive feedback throughout the entire course of treatment. So it wasn't that these things weren't coming up, that, or I wasn't giving the client room to speak. Everything had been positive feedback until the very end, in which it entirely flipped. So as far as I was informed, the client knew the boundaries. The client knew that, you know, at church, they would be a high, and that would be it. The client knew that our relationship was professional, and then the complaint occurred, and I received the opposite feedback.
Yeah, that does bring me to just ask you how you, I listened to the audio, and how, I guess I'm wondering, how did you feel hearing, having your client approach you? Very, very, you know, calm, logical, you know, physician to tell you that all those things that you thought would be helpful, she felt were harmful.
I was absolutely shocked and bewildered. And again, that was a meeting that entirely threw me off. That I have since tried to spend, it's been a year since that, and spent quite a bit of time wrapping my head around, where is that feedback coming from? Why does she think I said these things? Why was this being interpreted that way? I thought we had an understanding here. And in hindsight, some of the, whether there was a misunderstanding or not throughout the therapeutic relationship, there became one. And I don't know if there was an understanding, and then at the end she doubted that understanding and retracted, or if there was a misunderstanding that I missed along the way. I still don't know.
Would you do anything different now, seeing how that ended?
Yes. I would adhere to a less relaxed approach, and be, while I thought the lack of jargon and technical and creating a again very very open and relaxed environment was still adequately communicating what I wanted to communicate, I would have been far more specific in every word that I used.
Question. It seemed from the interview process that you dismissed or minimized the fact that just the therapeutic relationship between therapist and client creates vulnerability. Can you speak to that?
It's not to say that clients aren't vulnerable. I mean, that's why they're going to treatment in the first place. But to say that that interaction at church where the client acknowledges me and I don't have to feel the need to run away, that I can in that moment be there and say hi, is not putting the client in a vulnerable position. So are clients vulnerable? Yes. Is the therapeutic relationship that we were in, is the potential interaction at church creating a vulnerability? No, I don't think so. Were not personal interactions that went on. It was, we happened to acknowledge each other. And that article, particularly of the harm that happened to the client in the I believe it was New York case, comes to mind. That this was a client that struggles with rejection and shame, and I didn't want to do something that would further that.
So that focuses on running into each other at church. But that relationship between therapist and client, the nature of that relationship, and then looking at hugging a client, sending these kinds of text messages, not really addressing her question about relationships and boundaries, those are the things that, those interactions and that vulnerability in each of those moments, to me, far surpasses the concerns of her running into you at church and that interaction. So that's where I'm confused, is there doesn't seem to be an acknowledgement of the vulnerability in those moments throughout the process.
And at that time, I thought we were communicating better. And obviously, that if there's something different that I would do, it would definitely be these moments where I was not specific enough. I was not clear enough. I assumed far too much understanding in those moments.
Have you taken any steps since the complaint in terms of your clinical approach, your clinical skills, education, trainings? Have you done anything since the complaint was filed?
Since the complaint was filed, yes, I've gone over documentation. There was a couple things that were brought up during the interview that I was unaware of, that I've corrected that. And I've looked at the approach that I take with the clients in clarifying those clarifying those boundaries with clients. And again, not wanting to make the mistake of assuming understanding.
I just have one question, sir. Does the phrase professional distance mean anything to you?
Yes, because if you're best friends with somebody, you can't be objective with them. Professional distance allows for that objectivity.
Do you imagine that you maintained professional distance in the relationship that has brought us together today?
We were not friends. We had no interactions outside. The only interactions we had were within therapy. I didn't have that other relationship that I think would close the professional distance. And unless there's more to that to add.
I just wanted to know your understanding of professional distance.
Yeah, I would not do therapy with my mother-in-law.
Yeah. Additional questions?
I just had... Sorry. Who is?
Mr. Charles and then Mr.
Go ahead.
Chen.
I'm going to continue to use the term lax because it's been used already so much.
Sure.
Would you define prior to this instance, prior to, with your other clients, having similar lax nature or no?
I mean, I'm highly influenced by Carl Rogers, and so having that client-centered approach is not completely new or unique. Again, some clients need a little more direction than others. We're doing true Rogerian counseling, I think, has some limits. So that's not completely out of the wheelhouse, having that Rogerian approach. But with her, it seemed appropriate to give more of that client direction.
Have you modified that approach since this complaint?
I still believe Rogers to be a genius. Yeah.
I just had a couple questions regarding kind of your text messaging policy. How do you communicate to clients about when to text, how to text, what to text about?
So that text in particular of you can text when you want, while I now would like to eliminate the word randomly, I meant randomly in regards to time or day, not random regard to topic. I encourage clients to reach out. That's something that when you're at really busy agencies, you don't necessarily get the chance to offer that additional support to the client. I do emphasize with my clients, though, that I might not answer, especially on weekends or late nights. Obviously, I'm not up at 3 o'clock in the morning providing those things. That's going to go to voicemail. However, why it's encouraged is because it's an act of the client validating their concerns. I like it when clients validate their concerns and say that their help is important. What becomes frustrating in therapy is when you meet the next week and the client has said that they had a terrible week and everything was disastrous and they almost had a breakdown, they almost went to the hospital, and I find that there was no reach out at all. It was completely in the dark. From one week to the next, everything fell apart and you didn't validate that concern, you didn't reach out for help. They have access to I provide them with the crisis line, the warm line. My voicemail says, you know, emergency, call 911. But that act of saying my issue is important and I need to start reaching out for help I believe that to be significant. Yeah. As opposed to saying, I'm in a terrible place and my problem's not important enough, so I'm just going to stay isolated.
And the reason why I asked that question is because I'm reading through this plethora of text messages that we have here. And you had stated that you only text regarding sessions, but there's an entire conversation here and very lengthy text messages from you that have nothing to do with the therapy. And I don't know if you can see how, you know, we talk about, sure, it's talk person-centered therapy, right? It's validating an individual's needs, but it's also validating the nature of the therapeutic relationship. And nowhere do I see anything saying, hey, can we get onto a phone call and discuss scheduling? And there's more text messages about personal things than there are about the session. So can you kind of speak to that? Because what I'm reading here, it's not about therapy. It's about it's friendlier than a therapeutic relationship.
But they were not personal conversations talking about the latest Coyotes game.
Well, I was talking about Washington, COVID, the psychological impact, yes, I'm a nerd, things like that. So I'm just wondering, can you see how those that type of language and that the essence of that text message has nothing to do with therapy? And just wanted to get your thoughts around, like, so when other clients text you, when do you draw the line of when it should stop?
And during the interview, I didn't remember that text at all because my approach to text is a client texts me and says, I can't make it, I'm sick. And that would be the general conversation. I mean, that's the general approach to that. And so still, I don't recall the conversations you're talking about. I'm not saying that they didn't exist, but I don't recall them. I don't save those text messages.
Thank you.
Additional questions? All right. This will be our time to discuss amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt.
In reading everything and kind of the exceptions that feels were made for this client with varying things everybody has brought up today, which has been helpful, I think it appears that the investigation provides very clear and convincing evidence that inappropriate boundaries were had with this client and that inappropriate boundaries were felt by this client with her reach out. And so I do find for the violations, I think the investigation supports them very well.
And Madam Chair, members of the board, the reason I asked about professional distance is because if, as a therapist, I do not understand that concept, if I don't have that concept with me, then I can make lots of mistakes, and I can get way too close to a client and not even notice it. But the concept of professional distance that was taught somewhere else in my life has been very, very helpful. I cannot tell my client, you're gorgeous, because I'm not supposed to recognize that you're gorgeous. I can tell the client something responsible, but I can't cross that boundary. That, for me, is required professional distance, which I don't think happened here.
And I think along with that is the therapeutic relationship is temporary, regardless of the approach you're using, right? And so that's part of the distancing, is even if it's person-centered, right? My role is to help you get there so I can exit stage left.
Yeah.
But if I continue to hug you and text you back and show up at the barbecue, I'm not, I blurred that role that the distance should create.
Yeah, and some of my biggest issues here is just there's just a lack of insight here. The fact that someone comes in, any client comes in, but especially at this level of vulnerability, to not recognize that the things we say and the things we do in that room mean everything to that client and to not remember sending these multitude of messages through text about things that don't relate to therapy is really concerning to me. And my worry is, does this extend to others? Right? If I'm going to break the boundary with one, I'm probably going to break it with others. And I think that's a big concern for me right now. And just, again, you know, when we talk about, you know, maybe being guided by a theoretical model, well, sure. But knowing what I know about person-centered therapy, it's my job to respect the therapeutic relationship. And nothing here said like, that was done. So more damage was done, right? And the code of ethics says do no harm. I see a lot of harm here, so.
That's why I asked the question I asked, the convenience around the term lax and that the reference to the therapist that prescribes that, it, in my opinion, caused me concern because that would mean there's this same laxness with a multitude of clients. And if that one of those clients was my daughter, I would find issue with that.
And the suggestion that there is any method that is superior to or in conflict with the rules and statutes is just wrong. You know, it's yeah. Not true and it's dangerous.
I agree. It's easy to use lax and hide behind a theory or a format and saying, and then it's not aligned with that. And so, huge concern. And is this a way for him to press the boundaries with everybody else? And at what point was there insight to say, the stuff that she's dealing with, I should not, we've crossed the line, maybe I should refer her out to a female therapist that because she stated she has issues with relationships with men. And so why was that never even a conversation, maybe even at the beginning, maybe I'm not the right therapist, maybe you should have a female
therapist. Okay, so I think we're all in agreement that the violations occurred. So I move that we find for ARS 3232-5116L, engaging in conduct, practice, or condition that impairs the ability of the licensee to safely and competently practice, and ARS 3232-5116K, failing or refusing to maintain adequate records of behavioral health services provided to a client.
Is there a Q?
Q. What did I say?
K. Just for the record.
Yes. Thank you.
Is there a second?
Second, Trotter.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Heidi Quinlan.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Dr. Bailey, suggestions for where we go from here?
I would throw out offering a consent agreement. I thought some things appropriate would be 12 months of supervision, one time a month for the full 12 months, you know, just addressing this complaint, just addressing you know, just thoughts about, you know, any transference that might have happened, anything with would have led to relaxed boundaries, I can't really think of anything else specific in that. I would open it up to anything specific around what the supervision should cover. I would recommend a 3-unit grad class on ethics. I think there is a lot of areas to be either refreshed, relearned, and for sure tightened up. And I don't think a 6-hour clock hour class might really hone in all of the nuances of how our ethics are important and all of the different things that are involved with our ethical obligations. A 6-credit hour class on dual relationships and boundaries, 6 contact hours of just staying out of trouble or the equivalent, heavy focus on documentation and what we need to document in the therapeutic process. And then I would suggest 6 hours of harassment. And the reason I would do that is for Mr. Davis, you brought up a lot of language that we could easily misunderstand in the therapeutic room. And I think if we took a class on harassment and just kind of listened to what things are considered harassment these days, we might be able to create a more clear idea of what we can say, what we probably shouldn't say, and how we can say very similar things but with different language as the professional.
Increasing the supervision to twice a month?
Sure.
I just think, you know,
1 hour a month, a lot can be glossed over or shaped, and I'd like to see somebody involved.
I'm open. Sure.
I just wanted to put on the record, I didn't think this initially, but after sitting here and hearing from the licensee, I mean, I wonder whether he's teachable. And maybe I just want that to be on the record, because it sounds like maybe we've got a motion that's going to pass, but I didn't hear a lot of willingness to change or remorse or even recognition that anything had been violated, which is terrifying to me. And so I just put that out there.
I'd second that. When I asked if there was any modification, no, it was this therapist was a genius. That to me, I don't know.
Do you think it would be resolved with possibly some therapy for the professional himself?
I mean, I defer to the professionals on this one. I just wanted to tell you I was getting a gut feeling hearing him talk, and I wanted to raise it. So I'm going to defer to you guys on this one, but I did want to raise it.
I very much respect that. That is a kind of, for lack of a better word, a yuck feeling. I'm hoping that all of this education and will trigger some of that and open it up. That's my hope. Mm-hmm. I do share the same feeling, though. So,
Ms. Zavala, correct me if I'm wrong, because this was in my previous time with the board, but there was a time where, as part of consent agreements, we did have the stipulation that they had to work in a licensed agency, right? So there was more oversight than in a private practice.
Correct.
I don't know. I just wanted to throw that out there because we haven't done that. But I'm also just, because I share those concerns, and I don't know, I just think when you're in a supervised setting, there's a lot more oversight and people involved in the care that you're providing to other clients, and I don't know, I just wanted to throw that out as another suggestion.
Oftentimes before the interview and, you know, the time that we have someone sitting here, there's a lot that happens, and I'm worried that I didn't see any of it.
And I think that Dr. Shen raised that issue with the term insight, because that's what I was going for, trying to see if I could find insight, if I could hear or see insight. And I think that we don't.
Is it possible at all, and this may not be, but can we require that any of the supervision is direct observation?
Yes, you may.
And I'm saying that because, you know, reading between the lines, there may be interactions we're not seeing, and I want to see them. I want to see how clients are being interacted with in general, the verbiage and language you're using, your presence with the clients. So if we can make some of that supervision, maybe if it's twice a month, one of them be direct observation for a certain period, I think that may make me feel a little better that someone's watching and not just behind the scenes asking what's happening but versus seeing it. Do you guys agree with something like that?
Excellent, yeah.
I agree with Megan. It does. It's a feeling, and it's been a year, and there's still no insight. And if you don't have insight after you, that lends me to think there's a little bit more intent to not be insightful or to think that what you're doing is okay. Mm-hmm. Not because, I mean, I think he's very intelligent. I don't think it's a lack of insight at all.
I don't know, Dr. Bailey, you mentioned maybe like one direct observation once a month, including an additional session, something like that, or
sure,
that?
Sure. I also like the idea of therapy versus maybe agency work. I'm just not feeling so confident about that these days. but I do, yeah, in lieu of that. So, Mr. Chen, the live component typically in all of our language is audio review and includes video review. Would you want it to actually be a live, you know, in person or full session recorded or videoed with the option of the supervisor to pick and choose where they go in that video? Or full review of the session?
Just
saying we have that language built in that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would honestly care what form. I don't know what my peers think. I think video would be okay, would be enough.
I would like then it to stipulate that the supervisor has the right to go wherever in the video, that it's, I don't know the language.
Yeah, have the whole session made available to them.
Agreed. Oh, yeah, that works.
I think if you just say one of your sessions this month, I'm going to be there, well, you could be totally different if you're going to look at, I'm just going to pick one that's already happened and watch it. You'll get a truer idea of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. How many hours of that would we want?
Well, if we're going to supervision twice a month for a year, for 12 months, and I wouldn't, I'd go the whole 12 months, maybe one live a month.
Yeah, I think that'd be...
Out of all the hours, probably, that an average clinician is seeing clients for a month.
With different clients.
Yeah.
So you can't...
Just use the same one through, absolutely.
And you said live?
Whether it be within our language, so it could be audio or video.
What do we think about video. Go ahead.
But we want video, though, right?
Well, we have that language. That's the only reason I was asking.
Ah.
I know you can't then see body language and whatnot, so you're right.
So, like, there's a way to cut out audio. I want video. Preference.
Okay.
Video or live in person.
Video or in person, okay.
And I'm just going to go on the record to say if we're also videotaping our client, we need to have consents to videotape. Okay.
And then the therapy, what do we want to do for that?
If we have supervision two times a month, therapy, and I'm okay with one time a month for the full 12 years. I think that, or 12 years, 12 months. Sorry. Just to cover, you know, not just so that it's compact in one time frame, a little bit more over the extent of the entire probation time.
I wonder if it would be even more responsible to have to require an evaluation and then have a recommendation made by the evaluator in terms of therapy, a psychiatric evaluation followed by a recommendation, and then we respect the recommendation of the evaluator rather than specifying therapy in case an evaluator would not think that that would be necessary.
My honest opinion on that?
Yes.
I worry that you can get through an evaluation. And that's just my opinion. I'm open to feedback, but I worry about getting past an evaluation and then we don't have the...
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm leaning toward the therapy in light of what's been said today as far as the insight development.
Right.
And if we're promoting that, if we're trying to facilitate that so that we are not here again under any similar matters, that hopefully I'm hoping that that would be developed within that process. All right, Ms. Zavala.
I do have it, but I do have one question. This is just more for you to educate me. So if we're going to require it to be live or video, does the clinical supervisor pick which client that's going to be, or does the licensee choose which client that's going to be?
It would need to be the licensee because we can't mandate that a client consents to being videoed. What I'm hoping, though, is if, you know, we have the entire session and the supervisor has access to any part or all of that session, we'd probably get a pretty good feel of that. And then to Ms. Dobrat's suggestion, it can't be the same client over. So we would get a nice spread, I think, of his client load, how he's kind of addressing most clients.
Does the board want to consider, due to the egregiousness and where this conversation has gone today, to consider putting a stayed suspension on it? What that means for the newer members, when you have a case that's egregious where the board wants to provide an opportunity to rehabilitate, they'll do either a stayed suspension or a stayed revocation. And what that means is it stayed, but if they were to go out of compliance with the consent agreement, that stay would be lifted and the license would be suspended for a period of 1 year. Okay, so we would be offering the licensee a consent agreement for 12 months,
he would be required to have supervision twice a month. The supervision focus would be on the concerns in the complaint, as well as boundaries, countertransference, behavioral health ethics, documentation, as well as insight. The clinical supervision would, once a month, would need to be in person. Once a month would need to be direct observation, which could be by video or in person, and it would need to be a different client each month. He would also be required to get therapy. The therapy would be once a month. The therapist would be would receive a copy of the report and have the concerns of the report, as well as add on a focus of a lack of insight in regards to today's meeting. In addition to that, we'd be requiring to take a 3-credit graduate level course in behavioral health ethics, 6 contact hours in dual relationships, 6 contact hours in staying out of trouble or the equivalent, and 6 contact hours in harassment, as well as there'll be a stayed suspension on this, and if not signed, invited to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remanded to a formal hearing. Would that be a motion, Dr. Bailey?
So moved, yes.
Second, Trotter.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Heidi Quinlan.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Thank you. Motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Reyna, for being here.
And Madam Chair, members of the board, lunch is here.
For a half hour, so 12:22, and we'll take a break. Come back at 12:55. All right, we will come back to order at 12:57 and go back to agenda item number 7E, Mr. Pava. And don't believe that what applicant's going to be here.
That is correct.
All right, can we have a brief summary from board staff, please?
Madam Chair, members of the board, this matter is before you for two reasons. Mr. Pava did submit a LASAC application, and while his application was pending, barring this investigation, he did notify the board that he had had a relapse on he let us know on 3/19 that he'd had a relapse and that he was terminated from his place of employment for being intoxicated and disruptive while at work. Based on that, he also then went on to ask if he could withdraw his application. And as you all are aware, ARS 3232-75D does allow the board to consider them to allow them to withdraw their application if you felt that their conduct didn't rise to the level of unprofessional conduct. So the first matter for the board members to consider today is whether or not you believe his conduct would be unprofessional, and if so, then you would need to make a motion to either deny or approve his withdrawal of his application.
Are there any questions for Paula? Right. So first decision is, as she stated, whether or not to allow the withdrawal. Mr. Trotter, I believe you're leading this discussion.
Correct. Well, I will motion to deny the withdrawal request, unless anybody.
I would like to oppose.
You want to oppose his statement, or you want
yes,
to?
Yes, okay. I'd like to oppose his statement. I know that we resist allowing people to withdraw, but I'm wondering if that's the consensus today. that if Mr. Trotter voices the consensus that in fact we should not allow him to withdraw.
So Ms. Davila, what you summarized is the only way that, I mean, in terms of statute and regulations, would be as if we didn't think the behavior rose to.
Correct. And it's always been, I mean, this is somebody that's, you know, is actively working in a behavioral health field and has applied for licensure who has a substance abuse problem. In the past, we just had one a couple of months ago. It would be
something the board would consider, but would deny the request for withdrawal, because it's basically it's an opportunity to memorialize it. There's always an opportunity for them to come back and reapply that and show that they've been rehabilitated. But if the board were to take no action, allow them to withdraw, that technically would mean that he can go to any other state, and not memorialize the conduct and be able to get licensed. So I would just ask the board to consider that. And again, I think if you read the statute, if he was a licensee and he was actively using a substance, I believe that there would be a violation that would be found. So.
Then I agree with Mr. Trotter.
Is that a second, Mr. Davis?
Say it again, second. Yes, indeed.
Do we need a roll call for denying the withdrawal?
We do not.
Okay. So all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
And then next, Madam Chair, I would ask the board members to consider opening a complaint and finding a violation of ARS 32-3275A6 as it relates to ARS 32-3251-16F, which is engaging in active habitual intemperance in the use of alcohol or active habitual substance abuse.
Are there any questions for Ms. Ballard?
So moved, Trotter.
And Davis seconds.
And since we're finding a violation, can we have a roll call, please?
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Cassandra Parr.
Aye.
Heidi Quinlan.
Aye.
Mark Shen.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
And then at this time, it's up for the board members to determine what they would like to do with the application, whether to offer him a consent agreement and issue him a license or to deny for unprofessional conduct.
And if we deny for unprofessional conduct, the time frame where he could come back to reapply?
Technically is as early as he would like.
Okay.
Any other questions?
I just wonder, what is one of those worse than the other in terms of making it more difficult to, get insured or get hired in the future or anything. I mean, I guess we don't.
I don't understand your question.
Well, I'd like to do the thing that makes the most sense for the applicant, given that this person's working in our field, and I don't want to, just deny if that's the thing that, is the easiest for us if, I know the applicant's not here to speak on their behalf. I don't know what we usually do. Do we usually deny?
We in the past, in situations like this, and we've actually had a couple in the last year, we have denied for unprofessional conduct. Because if you think about it this way, if we were to offer a consent agreement, not only would there be a number of stipulations, but we have just found the F violation, which is active intemperance, which means he actively has a problem that he needs to tend to. So I hear where you're going, but definitely has been the board's practice in the past to deny for unprofessional conduct. And then he can come back at any given time, and we see him come back all the time, maybe after a year of sobriety.
And not be under a consent agreement, perhaps.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, it's very possible, depending on the time frame. If he were to come back 6 months from now, the board members may want to issue him a consent agreement to have a little bit more sobriety under his belt, or if he were to come back usually a year after, if he's got a strong relapse prevention plan, you can just issue him a license without that.
And in addition, though, to the alcohol, the marijuana, I mean, you look, he wasn't licensed, but on his application for where he went to work, he listed that he was already a LASAC.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So... That's an issue.
And then just point of clarification, though, he could still be working actively as a BHT or anything in ADHS. Okay.
In Arizona, yes.
Any other questions or a motion?
And if I could just add to that, Dr. Bailey, because I think it's important for the members, newer members, and even the public members to know, another reason to memorialize the conduct is that if he was working for a licensed agency as a BHT, they could, I would hope that they would do a search through the board's verification system or through the National Data Bank practitioners and be able to have that information ahead of them. Again, not trying to keep him from getting a job, but making his employer aware that he has an issue that he's tending to.
I would move that we deny for unprofessional conduct.
Bailey, second.
Does that require a roll call?
Yes.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey?
Aye.
Robert Charles?
Aye.
Mary Coonrod?
Aye.
Cedric Davis?
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz?
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan?
Aye.
Megan Kramer?
Aye.
Cassandra Parr?
Aye.
Heidi Quinlan? Mark Shen?
Aye.
Antoine Trotter?
Aye.
And that concludes all of the disciplinary matters, I believe. We go to Ms. Vala, do you want to go to 10 applications?
Yes, please.
Speak to applications that, or licenses that were issued?
Sure. I had them, but I cannot find them, I believe. Oh, here we go. Since our last board meeting, our staff has issued 188 licenses.
Oh. All right, and looking at denials, let's start with counseling.
The Counseling Academic Review Committee has reviewed the applications of the following individuals and recommends their denial for licensure. One application based on a failure to pass the required examination. Four applications based on a failure to take the required examination. And then two applications based on a failure to meet minimum requirements. Total denials is 7.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Marriage and Family Therapy?
The Marriage and Family Therapy Academic Review Committee has reviewed the application of the following individual and recommends their denial for licensure. One application based on a failure to pass the required examination, one application based on a failure to take the required exam, and one application based on a finding of unprofessional conduct for a total of 3 denials.
Is there a second?
Rod, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. So carried.
The Social Work Academic Review Committee has reviewed the applications of individuals and recommends denial for 17 of those individuals. 10 denials of applications based on a failure to pass the required examination. 7 denials based on applications of those who failed to take the required examinations for a total of 17, and I move it.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
The Substance Abuse Academic Review Committee has reviewed the applications of the following individuals and recommended their denial for licensure. 3 applications based on failure to pass the required exam. 2 applications based on a failure to take the required exam for a total of 5 denials.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And then we have 1 Marriage and Family Therapy program up for approval.
The Marriage and Family Therapy Academic Review Committee recommends Messiah University Masters of Arts in Marriage, Family, and Couple Counseling program revision for approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Just a question. Do we know of any difference in this program at Messiah University? Any difference between that and the other marriage family therapy credentials that we have seen?
It would have been brought before the academic review committee. Do you?
Yes. So for these educational programs, in order for them to be approved by the board, it does go through the marriage and family committee. And the basis of them making the recommendation to the board is going to be to make sure that the credentials and the appropriate classes are met.
So they review to make sure it's up to the standards of similar programs.
So the different language probably is just their language.
In terms of the marriage, couple, and family?
Yes.
And I think we'll see a lot more of that leading to a couple of marriage and family. Inclusive message.
Thank you.
And Ms. Vala, do you want to go to 11?
sure if we could call Mr. Szymanski.
Oh, that's right. And we're going to go to the report from chair and the executive director's annual review, which has been uploaded, right?
It has been uploaded, but I also have paper copies. Does anybody want a paper copy? Good.
Mr. Szymanski, we miss you.
This is he.
Hello.
How are you?
We received word that you wanted to be contacted when we got to Ms. Zavala's annual review.
Yes, please.
All right. Well, we just called that matter. It has been uploaded to the portal. I will give everybody a chance to read that, so take a couple minutes and read through that, and then we can further discuss. For the record, Ms. Zavala does have the opportunity to have this review done in executive session. However, she had indicated she was comfortable with us doing it in the public forum. And I will just kind of share in terms of the process and what I was able to put in this review, and then get feedback if there's anything additional that you guys would want me to add, or if we're ready to submit this. It was an interesting process, and I've done this before, but it's always interesting to me. You know, we open it up for feedback from members, and I think those of you that contributed, it was difficult for me to pay attention to just this year, right? Because I think the success of this year and the success of the board is really because of the foundation that Ms. Zavala has laid for years and years, and so I wanted to make sure that I captured some of that, because really there was, I could have done one line, and that's that the board is a well-oiled machine now, but that doesn't capture everything that has obviously gone into it. And so I tried to capture what I've seen laid as the foundation, as well as obviously the successes in this past year, as well as the comments that I have heard from all of you. And I don't know if there's anything, you know, glaring that I missed or any feedback, but I would love.
I'd just like to thank the board chair for pulling this together.
Mr. Zemanski, any feedback?
No, I just agree with you, and I agree with you, what you wrote up. I mean, she's done an amazing job over the years, and we're just operating very well right now. Very impressed with all the work she's done.
And I think, you know, one thing that I noted in here, I think it's really important to put on the record, too, is even today we had a licensee that I'm sure had some difficult interactions and, you know, highlighted an apology and, you know, the working with Ms. Zavala, you know, as a positive experience, even though there were some frustrations. And so I think not only with your staff, not only with board members, but licensees and attorneys and complainants, that you've been able to develop those relationships, and that speaks volumes.
Mm-hmm.
Any response on your part, Ms. Ball?
I just want to thank you for your support, and I just, you know, want to go on record to say that I'm honored. I'm honored to be able to serve as the administrator for this board, and I thank my staff throughout the years, and I thank my new staff. It's all good. We're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thank the support of the members. I am very honored.
Do we need a motion then to submit this as a review?
Doug Davis moves it.
Is there a second?
Or a second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Aye. Sorry, Mr. Zemanski. Opposed? Motion carries. So we will be escalating this to the governor's office. Thank you all. And thank you, Mr. Zemanski.
Okay, thank you all. Have a good weekend.
Take care. You
thank
too.
You.
Take care.
Right. We want to go to agenda item 12, the treasurer report.
Treasurer's report was uploaded to the portal, and hopefully we've all had a chance to review it. I move to accept and approve it.
Is there a second?
Second, Trotter.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. And agenda item number 13, Ms. Zavala, take it away.
All right. So agenda item 13A, discussion regarding case assignments and reports. So really just a discussion today about that. So one of the things that Chairperson DeBratz had mentioned that she had thought that it would be possibly a good idea to start assigning cases that are on the consent agenda, because it appears over the last 6 months we've had, you know, significantly more, you know, being pulled. And not to suggest that people aren't reading it, but it would be nice to maybe have a professional or a public member that could lead the discussion if it was necessary. And so that's something that we saw this month, and it's something we're going to start doing moving forward. I ask of you, you know, we put a lot of obviously staffing time into making recommendations. So I would just ask, because it's on the consent agenda, if you feel that it shouldn't be on there and you have other concerns, I really would ask that you reach out to me, just because if I need to get further research or maybe just having a conversation or just understanding rather than being in the meeting and having you pull it, we may not have the information or maybe we missed something. Or maybe just to have a conversation sometimes makes it feel a little bit better. So that's something that we'll see moving forward. And then secondly, Mr. Trotter had mentioned to me through the review process that he was wondering if it's any possibility that we could get the board reports earlier. And as much as I'd like to say yes, it doesn't always work quite that easy. So what I would like to do, if everybody is in agreement with this, is that Ian on Wednesday sent me two reports from June. It's just a constant move. You all know that. Like Monday and Tuesday, we're processing this stuff, and then we're already going on for the next month in the midst of, you know, issuing licenses and renewals and everything else. So with that said, there is a law out there, ARS 3206, that allows a licensee to request their board report, and that's 10 days prior. So clearly those are always our main focus. That's what we get done first. So what I would like to offer you is that we basically have two uploads. So 10 days before, which would be two Fridays before, I'll just send a brief email out, and the email is basically going to say X, Y, and Z has been uploaded. This is who it's assigned to. And then the week before the meeting, it'll look like the normal one with all of the uploads. And then that way, if you have extra time or you want to do something over the weekend, you're welcome to read it. Because I do think it, you know, it makes sense sometimes people have more time. So if that works out, that's something we'll start doing. So, and that's probably half the reports. You know, that's probably half the reports that have to be done. So they'll be uploaded. So
thank you. That's exciting. Sorry.
You know how you spend your weekend.
I know I have no life.
Ms. Zavala, when you send out the initial email, will you have case assignments or wait till the second email?
I'll go ahead and I'll do case assignments. And again, I just want to be really clear. It can get tricky at times. It sounds really, really easy, but sometimes something might be on the consent agenda and then later on it gets pulled. And I always try really hard not to send too many emails out. And so I'm hoping that this will work. I'm thinking this will work. And what I might do is if it's a dismissal, maybe we will hold those or something, but I just want to keep from having to send you constant emails saying this is happening and this was uploaded and there's a supplement and this, because that would drive me crazy. So, just try to be, you know, kind of consistent, but I think it'll work. I think it'll work. So, and we have a lot of cases next month, some big cases.
You don't go back to the days of getting this in the mail.
Oh my gosh. Gosh.
Oh.
Literally.
The mail out stuff?
Yeah.
That's horrible.
When I first started, we literally would put them in boxes and wrap them up and mail them. And then we mailed flash drives. And then we have our portal system.
Mm-hmm.
Remember those days?
Oh, boy. Four boxes.
And not only did they get mailed to them, then they would walk into the boardroom with them because
yes.
they needed them.
Yes.
And you know how much material is on here. You
yes.
know, so, yeah.
Yes. Yes.
How much you've saved on postage.
The good old days.
No, these are the good old days.
So we're all comfortable with that?
Yes, very comfortable. Thank you.
And just as an FYI, it's kind of on the agenda. If you ever have, you know, any suggestions like that, feel free just to send me an email, because sometimes we think that we're helping you by not, but maybe you would like something different. So if it's something that we can do and make happen, just, you know, just let us know.
Just email Toby, not the whole group.
Yeah. That would be preferable. And then an update on my appointment to the Regulatory Education and Leadership Committee for the Association of Social Work Boards. I think you all recall I was appointed, I think, back in January. We've done just a little bit of work so far, but I have been invited to go to Washington, D.C. in the middle of July, and so I'll be doing some work for their program, and it'll be at no expense to our board. So I think it's like a Wednesday.
Pretty sweaty
through,
by then, I
Wednesday
think.
Wednesday through yeah. Sunday, I think, yeah. It's all good. And then next on the agenda, and I did upload all I have for it on the web or on your portal. So every year, CCE and MBCC does an annual retreat. And it gives our board basically three spots for somebody to go to. And it's usually two staff and one board member. This year it will be myself and the board's new deputy director, Aaron Yabu, will be presenting on behalf of board as staff. But there is one other that we typically use for a board member. And so I just uploaded the information so that you can see this is all we have so far. But within the next couple of weeks, there is going to be a registering process.
And I have expressed interest to Ms. Zavala, but it's a board's decision. And I have not gone in years past, so I would love the opportunity, but also entertain if there are others that would like to go.
I would definitely support that.
It's in Denver. Is that how you're going to make your decision?
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah.
Yeah, you can have Denver.
There is,
you know, because she was talking earlier about meeting in Bahamas. So.
Oh, yeah. That one I definitely
want
to go to.
Yeah, no. If there's no opposition, I'd like to move it.
Oh, second Trotter.
Oh. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. I'm very excited for this opportunity.
You go.
All right. Let's see. Moving on to nothing else that you have, Ms. Saval, right?
That is correct.
15 future agenda items. Anything that we would like to see put on a future agenda? All right. And I believe all those in the public are our investigators. Does anybody like to say anything? This is time for public comment. So our next meeting is scheduled for Friday, June 11th, 9 a.m. We will be in person. If there is anything else, is there...
Can we just get a confirmation? At this point, I have everybody in attendance on June 11th. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Trotter second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, we will adjourn at 1:26. Thank you all so much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.